Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, I was a member. But I was forced into this way of life. Hey, look, I've been dealing drugs ever since I was 12 years old. See, I didn't have the chances that you have, Miss Hawkins. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, Miss Hawkins. And I wanted to get out. But they threatened to kill my mother.
Who are you talking about, Mr. Brown? What they?
They. Look at it. Kareem Akbar. That's right, the educated brother from the bank. He's the real head of the CMB, the brains behind the whole thing. I told him, this thing is bigger than Nino Brown, and I got a list of
orders.
If I'm going down, I'm taking a whole lot of people with me.
Order in the court. Order in the court.
All right, all right, all right. Peace and love, family. Peace and love, family. Hope I'm coming in loud and clear. I hope everybody can hear me. If you can hear me, just send me a message. Let me know I'm coming in loud and clear. This is trustee training, notary training. Hopefully everybody get a chance to definitely call in and get in. Be prepared to ask questions. Be prepared to take notes. I included in today's class a breakdown of materials that you're going to need to bring to class. If you actually went through the Bitrix link, uploaded a couple, quite a few documents that go with this particular layout that you can actually go to your Bitrix portal and bring these documents up. Why are we talking about these documents? Because it's come to my attention that I need to make sure that everybody knows what they're doing, what they're supposed to be doing, and it's a refresher for the notaries and or trustees to kind of, engage in this. So again, I probably uploaded about, let's see how many documents was included in this thing. I know it's more than three documents. I know I did probably about seven or eight documents that it will be to your advantage to bring to class. We got the Modern Money Mechanics PDF. We got the Banker's Official Handbook dealing with commercial banking law, the Clerk's Practice. I included the Tax Crimes Handbook. I also included the Accounting Manual. Also, and everybody that also has gone through arbitration, I included a generic international commercial claim and also a truth app. This information is pertinent to knowing what you're supposed to be doing when it comes to your ledgering, the 990s that we've been talking about. You need to have this information in front of you. All right. For those of you that probably don't have this information in front of you and you're scrambling, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a short clip. I'm going to give everybody a chance to get it together. So when I go and break this stuff down, I'm going to leave no stone unturned. Hopefully everybody who needs this information is in this particular class. If you miss it, I'll make it available for those that can catch it on the flip side. So without further ado, I'm going to hit you with a short clip. It's going to last about 26 minutes, and it's going to talk about the Federal Reserve. Keep listening, because if you listen long enough, you just might learn something.
I'm Lynette Zhang, Chief Market Analyst here at ITM Trading, a full-service physical gold and silver dealer specializing in custom strategies, which we've got to have now, because it is quite possible that the Federal Reserve is starting to lose control. And the dangers are definitely rising that this is true, because there is a battle royale going on between Wall Street and the central banks, which I find to be really interesting. But that goes into also this article that Bill Gross, who founded PIMCO and was classified as the bond king for many, many years, wrote, the real bond kings and queens sit on the Federal Reserve throne. Yeah, because they're the ones that dictate inflation. And, I didn't take out it, but I can use this as a little reminder on how bonds work. This is interest rates, this is principal, this is when they're issued. The longer the maturity, the more volatility when interest rates move. So when interest rates go down, which we've been in an environment for a long time where the Federal Reserve has pushed interest rates down over time. Wait, let me show you that, okay? Down over time, that's why you've heard everybody say it's been a 30-year bull market in bonds. What happens to the principal? It goes up. But when interest rates rise, the reverse is true and the principal goes down. Okay, so this is the long Fed funds rate, which you can see started out as a high and, you know, we're anchored at zero. And this is when the crisis, the financial crisis first hit. Anchored at zero, attempted to rise and failed. Could not raise rates. And so what you're looking at here is a negative trend. And you know that it's a negative trend because there is clearly a series of high of lower and lower highs. And I guarantee you, can't give you a lot of guarantees, but I can guarantee you this. If you keep getting lower and lower highs, you will get lower lows. That's why you know, independent of what anybody says, you know it is a negative trend. We're going to come back to this at the end, but this is a little technical lesson, easy peasy for anybody to understand. But what I also want to point out is the TYVIX, which is the Treasury Volatility Index. Because in this article that Bill Gross wrote that he's talking about, which I'll show you in a second, there's 2008, there's 2013. Okay, and by the way, this is no longer published, right, because they don't really want you to know. But what you're really looking at here is the transition from the 10-year Treasury, which is the foundation of all of the markets, from being under the absolute control of the central banks, right, just little dashes. For those that have been watching me for a while, you've seen this graph before, to once the crisis hit, more volatility instead of dashes like that. Now you got a little up and down until it was handed over to the traders. It's Wall Street that is controlling the most, well, arguably, the most important foundation of the global markets, which is supposed to be the 10-year Treasury. And Bill says about that, 10-year Treasuries morphed into the risk asset category several years ago. Here it is, right here. This is when it morphed into the risk asset category. Now, does anybody talk about that? No, it's the safest thing that you can do. Yeah, because they can print the money to pay you what they owe you, which is why we have to hyperinflate because of all the debt that's on the books. They have to get rid of this debt. But you can see right here, morphed into the risk asset category several years ago. Stocks with valuations supported by low yields have entered the same category now, no matter the growth potential for 2021, 2022. It's like a spring. You hold your hand on a spring, so we were all shut in our houses for a very long time. When you remove your hand, the spring is going to shoot in a direction. But that does not hide the fact that the foundation of our global markets is dependent upon traders that really don't care about anything other than making a few bucks. And it does make you ask, has the Fed been dethroned? Are they no longer the kings and queens? Because, you know, they've certainly, pushing down those rates, they've certainly been taking on a lot more debt and a lot more garbage onto their lovely balance sheets. And look at, there's lots and lots of zeros. There's more zeros than we can comprehend. This is just a little sample. There are more areas, but you have to, people say, well, can't they do this forever? The answer is no, because they're not gods. They're humans. And everything that they do has a consequence to it, even if that consequence doesn't happen immediately. And remember, too, they like distance between their policies and the consequences of those policies so that you don't blame them. And if you listen to Fed Chair Powell talk or any of them talk, they never own the responsibility of creating an everything bubble, except, of course, in gold and silver. There is no bubble there yet. There will be, but that's a long time down. Well, I don't know how long, really, when they reset. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the bottom line is all of this liquidity in the market is having consequences, and ultimately none of this will end well for those that are sitting in fiat money products. And we know because the rates have been so low that massive amounts of junk bonds, and this is those that are rated below triple B. We also know that the category, they should be classified as junk bonds, but hey, thanks to the grading services like Moody's and S&P fudging things and allowing more leeway, this area is frankly a whole lot better, bigger than what you're seeing here. But this was just the start of 2021, and it outpaced every year going back to 2010. Shocker. Why? Because interest rates were going up. Here, this is 2021. This is the start, and we can see how much the 10-year bond, treasury bond interest rate has moved up. Now, it looks like it's just kind of hanging in this area for the moment, but beware when it breaks out above. However, just going back to this, as interest rates rise, the principal value falls. You just need to really always just do that to remind yourself, this is not safe. I don't care what any talking head says. This is not safe. It is now under the control of the traders and Wall Street. And interestingly enough, U.S. junk bond market loses steam on mounting inflation fears. Now, interest rates and inflation, in theory, right? The central banks raise interest rates, which you saw are anchored at zero. They're not moving them. They're telling you they're not moving them. They might be thinking. We'll see after the next FOMC meeting, the minutes meeting. But they might be thinking about raising rates, but they can't do it. There's too much debt that the government owns, that the corporations own. The households have been deleveraging a bit, but government and businesses have been gorging on that. We've talked about it so much. And you know, when interest rates rise, principal value falls. That impacts everybody's balance sheet. So you got to ask the question, is the party over? I think the party is over. I don't think it's obvious yet, but personally, I think the party is over. And they're talking about it being in an inflation regime. And I came across this really interesting graph. And remember, all
the question is the party over? I believe it is as well. I'm giving everybody a chance to go to their Bittrex and bring up the documents that are included in this class, because I'm going to be going over these documents during the class. And I need you, just like when we went over yesterday, a lot of folks are talking about lawful legal money, but until you actually looked at it, you had no clue on what you really was dealing with. Now that you see it, seeing is believing, now you know what you're working with, that helps clear out a lot of cobwebs out of the process. I want you to look at these documents because I'm not going to take for granted that, you know, I'm assuming that you've seen this stuff before. I'm assuming you've never seen it before. And after today, you're not going to have that excuse anymore. I've included probably about, let's say, a little over, let's see how many docs did I put in this thing? I think I put in 7 documents. Now, I'm not going to say these 7 documents are everything. I'm going to say that if you've never seen these documents before, you really don't have a clue on what you're doing. You don't have a clue on what you're doing, how to do it. You're kind of just feeling around, swinging left and right in the dark. At the end of the day, I want you to understand that the way this is set up in such a way where if you examine these documents, and I don't mean just skim over it, read it, you know, it's like you got to really, this, the information's got to be a part of you. I'm going to start with a document that's most obvious because I'm going to assume that everybody in this class is already, if you're a notary, you participated in arbitration. If you are a trustee, you are the recipient of an award from arbitration. 99.9% of my questions about your process comes from your documents that you have not read. And when I mean reading it, just having it, looking at it, that does me nor you no good. Reading it means don't believe what Bazell is saying. Research it for yourself. See, when you research it, when you check behind me, you know, because I'm going to give you every source that I'm using. What do I mean? Everything that I'm using, like, I kind of go in this direction. Bazell, I want to do this, that, and the other. Well, I'll hand you the book. And then you look at me like, I'm not going to read all of that. It's like, okay, now if you want me to break down this book, you got to pay for my time. And I'm not here to tell you how to think. I'm here to give you the resources and allow you to expand upon your thinking. But we all got to have the right come from. Arbitration, the reason why Paige agreed to arbitrate cases is because we're trying to bring all parties under current expected credit loss provisions, which is a fancy way of saying we're trying to give everybody a remedy through accounting. And there's an accounting rule that makes sure that everybody is made whole. Here's the fundamentals, though. You know how many people I talk to with college degrees, bachelor's degrees, master degrees? Oh, I'm an accountant such and such. I'm an attorney such and such. That's great. You know, here's the thing about me. You know, I don't trust people. I don't believe what people tell me. I go out, research it myself. I jump in. I fall on my face. You know, like, no, don't think that Bazell just gets it right the first time. No, the only reason why I speak with the confidence that I have and do what I do is because I done went out there. I got the T-shirt to match. And so, you know, I've tried it every which way but loose. One thing about me, I'm too stupid to stop. So if I know something to be true, it's not that the process is wrong. My come from ain't right because I'm expecting something, and maybe I already have received what I'm expecting. You know, it's just that I'm looking for it. Again, we all want that pat on the back. Good job, you did it. First of all, let's break down this whole process. First off, most people in commerce aren't doing accounting. Those of you that are notaries, you figured that out, yeah. They're like 2% of the population in commerce, public in the public sector, that are actually doing accounting. The other 98%, they're just flailing around. Now, if you look at how the system is set, the words that we use in commerce have different meanings in different situations. It's just that we aren't paying attention to detail. I'll give you an example. A few months back, I was doing a transaction with someone, and I sent over my Cash App. And then I got this real nasty response saying that this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. I said, did you read my Cash App tag? Oh, yeah, I read it. It's, you know, that's why I'm saying blah, blah, blah. Whoa, slow down. Catch your breath. You read it, right? Where did you send the retainer? And when they read it, they realized, oh, it's spelled different than what was on top. So, yeah, you didn't read it. Let me say it. No, you looked at it. You didn't read it. And I don't want you to be sorry. I want you to be careful because if you're not paying attention to detail, you're going to miss everything. And you're going to be sitting around waiting for something to happen that's already happened. It's just that you don't know it because you're not paying attention to detail. What do we say in commerce? Silence is acquiescence. silence is acquiescent. Like, you know, you're so used to, you know, we fight. Sometimes we don't realize that the battle is already won because we're so used to fighting. We're going to fight everything and everyone because that's where we are. As revolutionaries, we're like that. When I say there's the devil is in the details, the main reason why you're in the predicament that you're in is because you didn't pay attention to the details. Let me explain. The first document I'm going to go over is going to be the International Commercial Claim doc that's entitled International Commercial Claim. I want you to open that document. If you have Bittrex, we got a brand new reader which will let you open the document up. So you can go over it while I'm going over it. Because, matter of fact, I'm going to let you see what you need to do in your situation so you can start answering your own questions. I want to engage into the accounting. That's where I'm good at. All this other stuff I'm not really all that good at. You know, it seems like I am, but really not. I'm very good at the accounting proponent. You know, I need accounting questions. I need accounting equations. You know, that's what I'm really good at. I have put myself, quote unquote, in a position where if you come to me with something that makes sense mathematically, then we can figure it out. If you're going to tell me or ask me something and I have no clue mathematically what we're talking about, I'm like a fish out of water. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's why I have to listen so much, and I have to do my own research in what's being done because I'm like, what does that mean mathematically? I ask who you are in a transaction because I have to remind myself, well, you know what? They're asking me this because they are trying to receive a benefit or, you know, I have to do that. So I want everyone that's in this class to go to the International Commercial Claim document that's in the feed that brought you to this particular training. The International Commercial Claim document. Before I begin, I want to make sure that everybody is staring at the same thing I'm staring at before I go in. And I'm going to go down the line because I'm not going to go any further to everybody. We're all just, we're seeing the same thing. And trust me, it's going to be fun. You know, you're going to learn something. Caller, I'm going to call you by the last 4 digits of your numbers, 9659. If you actually have access to Bittrex, do you see the document that's in question?
No, I'm still, this is Brock. I'm still looking at the, I'm still trying to find it in Bittrex.
Okay, what you do is go to the event that that tagged everybody in to tune into this training. If you go to the comment section in the event, you'll see the documents that I uploaded in the comment section. And in the comment section, it's going to have all 7 PDFs and or Word documents that you – I've already sent them to a lot of folks already, so they may already have them, but I just – for class purposes, I just put the 7 back in there so everybody can access them and look at them in that capacity.
Okay, so I go to the feed, and it should be, you said it's in the thread, because...
If you go into the feed, and you come down to the event that says trustee training, notary training, event date, 5 o'clock, call in at 319-527-690. It's got the attendees. They affirmed that they were going to be participating, and right underneath that, it's going to be in the comment section. You're going to see all these PDFs that I uploaded.
Okay, the comment section.
Now, if you don't see it, here's what I'm going to do because I'm going to make it real easy for everybody. Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to put them back in for everybody. So this is for everybody, people that's in training that not in training. I'm going to make sure they get all this information. So bear with me. I'm going to make it available for everyone. Give me about 5 seconds here. Okay. It's uploading it now. I'm going to make it available to everybody. You can just go to the feed in about 5 seconds. Now you're going to get all the documents. I'm sending everybody the accounting manual again. That means you already got it. You're going to have it a second time because after today, I'm going to be on you about these documents. I have an expectation that these documents, I'm going to pretend like you've read it. We're just doing a refresher. Then from this point on, your questions need to be based upon what you already have, especially if you've already gone through arbitration, and especially if you're a notary. It's taking a while for the last ones to load up, so just bear with me. Who else? You still can't find the event. Look through your activities. You should be able to see, like, the event that started this class is going to be in that particular thread. But I'm going to make it available again. Hold on. All right, here we go, here we go, here we go. All right, I hit send. All right. And I sent this to everyone. Refresh your screen and see if you see it in the feed now.
Yep, I see it in the feed now.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, I'm going to go down the line because I want everybody on the same sheet of music. Just bear with me. All right, caller, last 4 digits of your number, 6918. Do you see the documents that are in question that we're getting ready to go over in class?
Yes, sir. It has the flag in the top left corner.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, and the document that I want you to start out with is the International Commercial Claim. Beautiful. All right, let's go down the line. Last 4 digits of your number is going to be 0301. Excuse me, I got the number backwards. Can you hear me?
Hi, Michelle, it's Victoria. I can hear you. I do have them.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. I love it when a plan come together. All right, let me go down the line. All right. Call the last 4 digits of your number is 1667. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, checking in to see if you see all the documents that I just was talking about inside of the matrix.
Yep, I see it. I'm going through now.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. All right, let me go on down the line because I want everybody on the same sheet of music. Caller, last 4 digits, your number is 4630, 4630. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Empress.
All right, all right. I'm checking in to see if you see all the documents that are in question.
Man, you know I see those documents.
I just want to make sure now. I want to make sure. All right, let me go down. I can't leave. You see, can't leave no man behind. I want to make sure everybody on point. All right, let me go to, okay, here we go. It's like a Philly number here, 6658. I got 6658. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right. Peace and love. I'm checking in to see if you actually see the documents that are in question. Are you in our Bitrix space?
Yeah, I'm on it. But I'm driving
okay.
Right now. But
okay.
I saw
if you're
the
driving, right. If you're driving, look, I just want you, we can always circle back to it. I just want to make sure everybody has access to it because I'm going to go over it. So if you can't, if you're doing other things, just listen in. You'll be able to circle back to it, in that regard. But I'm going to be going over it. I just want to make sure everybody's got access. Just bear with me. All right, let's go down the line. All righty. I'm going to go down the line. Let's see who else we got. Caller, last 4 digits, your number is going to be 7128. 7128, can you hear me?
Yes, this Taurus, I got you. I'm with you.
All righty. You with me? You see all the documents, brother?
Yes, sir.
All right, all right. That's what I want to hear. All right, listen. I'm going to go to one more, and then we're going to take off. Let's see. I got one more. I'm going to take off. All right, caller, last 4 digits of your number is 9280. 9280. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right. Oh, I know that voice. For those of you that don't know, just FYI for all of the students that are in the class, Corey is one of the oldest students that has been working with me. So, if you guys want to kind of find out, well, does Mr. Bay really know what he's doing? Is he just like a mad scientist? Y'all give my man Corey a call. I'll let him tell it. I'm not bragging, but, he'll break it down to you. Anyway, hey, Corey, you see all the documents that are in question inside of Bitrix?
Yeah. I'm about to put it in Google Docs real quick.
Okay. Beautiful, 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 beautiful. All right. I think I got one more. Let me just see who else we got because I want to make sure everybody's on point. Before I begin, because I'm finna go in, so I want you to see this. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is going to be 9704. 9704. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, I'm touching in. Can you access the docs, or you're busy right now? You're driving or something like that?
Yeah, man, I'm driving. That's
okay,
yeah.
All right, so no biggie. So just okay. Ride with me. Just ride with me, pay attention, because I'm going to go over it verbatim.
All right.
All righty. All right, okay. Everybody's engaged. The first document that I'm about to go over is going to be the admiralty claim. Let's spell it out. This document is what you receive when you deal with arbitration. You're going to have an admiralty claim and a truth affidavit. I want to start with the admiralty claim because there's something I want you to know. And so I'm going to assume that I did a really crummy job because you don't know this. And the reason why I know you don't know this because of the type of questions I get every day pertaining to your case, arbitration, Bazell, can I? You know, that's how it starts out, can I? And I'm like, okay. All right, so let's go here. Let me open this document up. So we're on point. All right. Now, inside of this document that's entitled the International Admiralty Claim, it's an editable Word doc, so you should be able to change it. I want to, you know, I don't like skipping, but I want to skip down to the affidavit of obligation. It's called the Affidavit of Obligation. It's located on page number 1 of 7 in this admiralty claim. It is called the Affidavit of Obligation. This is the commercial lien. This is a verified plan, a verified plane. Let's be real clear. Let me get it right. Yeah, I make my eyes a little bit big. You know, I can't see all that good. All right. This is a verified plane statement of account. So in other words, these are the things that you're supposed to know as a result of arbitration, which is going to answer a lot of your questions on can you do this or why I'm able to do this. You know, you won't believe the type of questions I get. I get people to ask me, well, why am I able to do all of this? I said, did you read your documents? Oh, yeah, I read them, but it's like, okay. So here we go. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to go over every one of all 32 of these maxims. Why? Because I got shit to do. I'm not going to go over all of them. I'm going to the important ones, though. Hint, you need to know all of them. You know why? Because if this is what I want you to do. Every day, and I want you to do this for 7 days straight, I want you to go to this document every day. Go through the maxims and then deal with whatever you're dealing with in commerce. If you do that, just do that, it'll probably help you 98% of the time on which way you should be going. It's just that important, especially if you're a notary. If you're a notary from here on out and you don't know this, we're going to have problems, major problems, because you're bullshitting. Here's the first one that I'm going to talk about tonight. It's going to be maxim number 4. Number 4, it says, an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth in commerce. An unrebutted affidavit stands as truth in commerce. I'm going to say it one more time for simplicity. An unrebutted affidavit stands as truth in commerce. Bazell, I sent this paperwork to these people and they didn't respond, and oh my God, what am I finna do? An unrebutted affidavit stands as truth in commerce. So if you have the truth, all I'm doing when I'm taking you around the mulberry bush and back is I'm trying to figure out, do you have any earthly idea how you got to where you are in arbitration? Because that is the truth that's standing in commerce. I'm going to go a little further. Let's look at number 5. I'm not going to go over all 32, but I'm going to go over some ones I think you really should pay attention to. Matter of fact, I told you, y'all, we're going to learn today. We're going to learn today. Let's see. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is going to be 9659. If you can see number 5, please read that for the class.
Number 5 is an unrebutted affidavit is acted upon the judgment in commerce.
All right, say that one more time. Say it one more time for
an
the chief.
An unrebutted affidavit is acted upon as the judgment in commerce.
All right. Now, and I know you're brand new to this, so I'm just picking on you, brother, but I'm trying to get everybody to get engaged. I want them to interact. What do you think that means? What do you think, number five? What does that mean?
It says an unreviewed affidavit is acted upon as a judgment in commerce. Well, if they don't respond, my guess is it's.
In other words, like I'm following where you're going. An unrebutted affidavit is acted upon as the judgment in commerce. The whole purpose of us arbitrating the case is to what? To assess the damages and determine what? A judgment, a default judgment.
So when you're sending
out your presentment, notaries, hear me clearly. When the notaries are doing their thing and you don't get a response from your affidavit, that affidavit is acted upon as the judgment. A lot of individuals think it's something that Bezel has to do magically to make their judgment jump off the page and do what it do. The notary's job is to simply get that information because you're a commercial registry to the other side in the form of a what? An affidavit. Why? Because it's acted upon as a judgment in commerce. Our whole purpose of doing your hearing, whether it's domestic or it's probation, it's math. It's commerce. I don't care who shot John. It's math. That's the only reason why I'm holding this class is because it's math. That's it. And notaries who execute commercial affidavits are acting in a judgment capacity. And every bit of information that you get, that you disperse, that you use is a judgment in commerce. Now I'm going to exclude you from the conversation, brother, because I know you're kind of brand new. So I'm going to pick on some other people. I need to know, before we go any further, who does not know what a judgment means in commerce and how they are supposed to be using a judgment in commerce. Matter of fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it easy. For everybody that knows what they're probably doing with a judgment, just say, I know how to operate in a judgment, and I move on to the next person. If you just totally lost with a judgment, here's your chance to ask. You're going to get your 5 minutes of fame. I'm going to give you a chance to ask me whatever you need to ask. So from here on out, you know what you're supposed to be doing with a judgment. Brother, just hold on for a second. I'm going to go down the line. Give me a second. All right, caller. Last 4 digits of your number is 6918. 6918. Do you have any idea what a judgment is and how you as a fiduciary are supposed to be using
it? Okay, so part of it, I'm giving it a crack at it, right? So,
right.
A judgment is, from my understanding, a judgment is a ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with that judgment? I'm assuming that you would go file it with the court once you have the judgment.
Okay.
That's as far as I know.
So let me help you out. The purpose of arbitration was to reach an assessment, which can be used as a judgment. Now, when you have a judgment can be used a lot of different ways. One of the main reasons for Page, which is the agency, which is the group of notaries and or arbitrators, including the American Arbitration Association. So I want you to be real clear. I think some people confuse arbitration with this is something just Bazell is doing by himself. I work with three other agencies. I just do all the work. You know, I got a big mouth. I like to talk. So they're like, well, shit, if you're going to do all the talking and do all the teaching, then we'll support you. You know, you're doing all the work. You're taking on all the risk, all the liability. You know, so because I don't mind talking about things I'm comfortable with, the American Arbitration Association is ready to take the lead when you have done your part. But, Zell, what part do I'm supposed to be doing? It's a judgment. It's commerce. You're supposed to be doing it. You're supposed to be taking that judgment and ledgering it, noting it, minting it into your accounting proponent. Now, wherever you at in your structure, I can't tell you without having more information on exactly what you're supposed to be doing with your judgment. So for me to answer your question, what am I supposed to do with your judgment? Well, what accounting equation are you using? What's the accounting concept? Those are always my questions. Now, if you can't answer that, how can I help you? I can't tell you what accounting concept to use because you can use any one you want to use. Now, is that beneficial? We got to get more information. In other words, I'm from today on out, no, you can't do nothing if you can't show it to me in a mathematical proponent. I'm not going to entertain anything else unless you can come to me with an accounting concept and an equation. I'm going to listen, but that's about it. Why? Because you got to have that in order for you to use it. You know why? Because the public court system, they're talking about everything but accounting. You know why? Because they're doing accounting in your face, but you're too ignorant to see it. But so how am I supposed to know all of that? Keep listening, because if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. I'm just picking on you, Lamont. I'm going to go down the line. Call the last 4 digits, your number 0301. Do you have any idea how a judgment is supposed to be used in arbitration? Any clue or idea how a judgment is supposed to be used? Last 4 digits is 0301.
Hey, Bazell. I guess judgment in this case, you've shown once you have a judgment, you've perfected your claim. And then you just follow through, I guess, with putting the libelees basically on notice of what's been decided per the arbitration judgment. And then there's thousands of different ways to perfect what's
right.
Now you have your claim.
Right. Like I'm going to kind of help you out. Beautiful answer. If you as a fiduciary is there to collect the taxes on behalf of the estate, then your come from is real simple. My judgment, and I'm going to show you how I will respond to that question. This is just me. Don't do what I do. Just listen. I am convinced that there's nothing nobody can tell me about my process. Because it's my process, not their process. They are not an authority in my commercial affair. They wasn't with me when I made these purchases. They wasn't with me when I put this in my accounting ledger. They have no clue. So I got to tell them unequivocally what they're supposed to be doing. So when I give instructions on my judgment, it is to collect the taxes that's owed to the estate. So the judgment is going to be used to collect taxes. That's how I respond. So definitely, Ms. Victoria, I concur with your response. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Let me move down the line because I want to make sure everybody get this. I don't want nobody after today saying, well, I didn't know. You ain't going to have that excuse no more. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is 1667, 1667. Checking in to see if do you understand the parameters of a judgment, how to use it in that capacity. If not, I'm here to help.
I clicked over. Listen.
Uh-huh.
I thought a judgment, I assume that a judgment is like you said, like a debt or something that's owed to you, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And how to collect on a judgment, I would assume that you would put some type of documentation together, which is like filing a tax return in regards to them owing you money. That's something that I would assume. So
beautiful. And that's a great response. Notice how we're looking at this. There isn't just one ultimate one answer that everybody's going to follow. It's understanding the fundamentals. The judgment is for you, the recipient, to articulate to the other side that owes your estate how much is owed and how to get it to the other side. It is the reason why we're all here. It's been put into a format that now has mathematical and equation capabilities. I'll say it another fancy way. It's now bankable. A judgment makes whatever they did to you bankable. That's why it's very important. So that's a great answer. Great answer. Let me move down the line because, again, I'm not going to leave no stone unturned. No one is going to have the excuse today of I didn't know. Caller, last four digits of your number is 4630. Same question. If you get a judgment, do you have any idea on how the judgment is supposed to be used?
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer this way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have an idea based mm-hmm. on what you taught and based on what I read in the document. Have mm-hmm. I done it? No. Why haven't mm-hmm. I done it? I'm skittish, and I am mm-hmm. a mechanical learner. So I need mm-hmm. some hand-holding on this one.
Yeah.
So, yes, I understand that the document is basically, I mean, it's a judgment, which is also can be considered what I would call, you file it to get the order, or you file an mm-hmm. order with it, mm-hmm. and then you do the administrative process with it to put everybody on notice and to receive the findings in the judgment / order or the judgment that will render an order. That's my understanding.
Right. And again, that too was an excellent response. Because you have a background in taxes and tax preparations, I'm going to give you a different set of glasses just to look at the same thing. Okay, I want you to look at the fact that most individuals, when they have to report or file, they're literally going to be entering information into some sort of form that either the IRS, Department of Treasury, if not both, are going to look at and grant, give, restrict, hold, offset. You know, in other words, you're going to put your bidding on some sort of form. Now, I want you to not put the glasses on, the special glasses I'm giving you. The form mm-hmm. is really an accounting ledger. It's called a form, so you'll fill it out. If this is an accounting ledger, that really would scare the bejesus out of you. You think you're skittish now. You're really skittish. You're like, what do you mean an accounting? You know, I'm not an account. You know, do I need an account? You know, they call it a form. Now you got no problem with filling out the information. But let's leave the colored glasses on for a second. If mm-hmm. you analyze the form as a accounting ledger, what you will realize is that, am I filling this out to demonstrate an income statement? Am I filling this out to balance the accounts? Or am I filling this out to show the liabilities? What is the purpose of me filling out this form? We'll pick a very basic one. You're familiar with it. We're all familiar with it, whether we want to admit it or not. The 1040 form. Form 1040.
Mm-hmm.
Write this down for, you know, I've already told you to do this a couple of times, but this is for the new people. Form 1040 is a financing statement. It is not the only kind. It is just the one of many financial statements. You ought to look at that 1040, and in your mind, I want you in your close your eyes and use your imagination. You imagine staring at a T.
Mm-hmm.
And then open your eyes and look at that 1040 form and see if you can see the T accounting being used on that 1040 form. If you look for it, you'll see it. Matter of fact, if you read what they want you to put in these numbers, they're going to tell you. We're going to say, and I know most of you have your accounting manual. You done read these goddamn 13 pages like I done told you till you're blue in the face, but this is for the new people who've never done it before. The first 13 pages of your accounting manual is technically telling you that most people who pay taxes, they think cash is actually an accounting concept. Creditors know that it's an accounting convention. The difference in whether you get all of the benefits is that you treat the cash method of accounting as not a method of accounting, but a concept. They first, before they go into any of the different types of accounting concepts, they talk about what? Concepts and conventions and the difference between the two. Here's where the new people can pick up from all of our mistakes. How did we get to this Federal Reserve System? Was it by osmosis? Or was it a plan? We'll say it was a plan for everybody that don't know. Well, what act introduced this plan? Well, since we're talking about the Federal Reserve, is there some sort of act? Do they have a Federal Reserve Act? I'm pretty sure they do. So we're just going to call it, for conversation purposes, a Federal Reserve Act was passed before legislation. What did we just read about unrebutted affidavit?
It's accuracy.
Okay. All right, so let's just so
you agree to it.
Right, you're right. So watch this, notaries. Does it say, is there a statute of limitations on when you can rebut the affidavit?
No, it's actually not.
Right. So when you learn that cash is more of a concept than it's more of a convention than a concept. Now you can what? Rebut. You can say, wait a minute. I was taught some different shit. I'm rebutting this now because I got some new information. This is why you're able to do the stuff that we're doing. I do not want no one to call me never no more in life and don't have that bit of understanding of what you have done or will do when it comes to your arbitrated case. I'm going to tell you why. It makes it extremely difficult to get you back into the saving grace because I'm exhausted. You know, see, I deal with institutions all day that don't know this shit. They don't know it. I know they don't know it. So after I done been on hold with the IRS and talked to all these folks, by the time I deal with my notaries, it's like I'm back in the land of the free. But when I hear, can I do this? You know, now I take the notaries as they may be asking me this because they might got a client. So I don't associate when you say, can I, if it actually is you. I think you might have just, well, you know, he'll know what I mean when I say that or this, that, and the other. So I give that the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, I had a couple of conversations with a couple of folks off and on between yesterday, today, and last week. Before, you know, I'm just telling you what's been piling up on my plate. I got so much information I got to get to you guys that's doing arbitration. I don't have time to keep explaining the basics. Because we're at a point with this thing where if you don't know it, you're going to have to take what you do know and roll the dice. Empress, I'm picking on you a little bit. You know, I know you're a little skittish with it, but you know, I ain't trying to push you off into the pond.
Let's go.
right. Because what I'm saying is, in order for a lot of us to learn, like you said in the beginning, you're a mechanical learner. Some of us is gonna have like You know how I learn by my failures.
Yes.
You know, so I have no fear of failing because that's the only way I'm going to succeed. I got to get the nose out of the way.
Agreed.
I've been doing it for so long. I know when people are trying to convince me otherwise, they've not done any research. It's a moot point with me. If you're going to argue with me, you better bring math. If you don't bring math, it's not going to work because you're going to say negative and positive statements trying to prove a point. You can't prove nothing. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to prove anything. I'm going to disprove everything because that's all that we can do when there's no math involved.
Right.
So when I say the devil is in the details, keep looking at this maxim and affidavit because it's going to be very revealing. So Miss Empress, that was an excellent response. I think you got it. I'm going to move on because I probably got some new folks that's like, what the hell are they talking about? I'm lost, you know. So I'm going to give everybody a chance to get it. All right. Bear with me. All right, so here we go. Let me get my cursor going. Here we go. All right, let's go down. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is going to be 6658, 6658. If you can hear me, same question applies when it comes to judgments. Do you actually know what a judgment is, and do you know how to enforce one?
Yeah, and no.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do understand about a judgment, on top of everything that we were just talking about, you know, it's something that's owed to the estate, and like we were saying, is a due process, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Once we do that, like sister said, we put them on notice,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
we do the proper filing, accounting work for it.
Right.
So on my part, I'm assuming it's an asset. You know, that's falling into the account, assets and liabilities.
Correct. So literally, in that level of response. I'm just going to kind of add to what you just said. You want to always look at a judgment as an ability to now collect the taxes that's owed to you. The reason why I want you, especially the new people, I want you to stay in that frame of mind, it makes it easier for you to grab the fundamental concepts. Because I'm going to go ahead and tell you this right now before we really get into it. It's your ability to create something special for you and your trust that makes this work. There's not a magic template that I can give you that's going to be a one-size-fit-all. Go ahead and get rid of that thinking. I can't give you anything that's a one-size-fit-all because no two people, no two situations are the same. It's your job to critique something that's very specific that benefits you. So here's the frame of mind. What is more beneficial? So I'm going to ask the same question, so I'm going to show you how I kind of help a lot of trustees out. I asked the question, well, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to collect taxes or pay taxes? Now, guess what? Now, if I ask you that, it's very easy for you to respond, right? If I'm giving you the choice, do you want to pay taxes or collect taxes? What do you want to do?
Well, natural reaction is to collect, but...
Right. So, but listen to how it goes. I'm a suspect, and because I can't really see everybody who's calling in, I'm going to assume that you're a more, just for conversation purpose. Watch this now. When I talk to melanated people who are actually Moors and I ask that question, you know what I'm listening for? I'm listening to see, well, if you really are more like you say you is, then you should have no problem with collecting taxes. We've been collecting taxes at the beginning of time. Why are you getting scared now? Because when you don't say I want to collect taxes, it's like being in prison and trying to convince your fellow inmates that you can leave anytime you want to. You see how ignorant that sounds? Oh, I really like it here. You know, I can go home when I want to. I really like the food. You know, that's what you're saying. You know, I used to tell students, and Corey can testify to it, I used to tell students, if you're not ready to sacrifice the straw man, get out of the class. Go get a job. This ain't for you. Well, I don't want to lose a benefit. Well, you don't need to be in this class because this is not the class for you. I'm not going to teach you how to milk the system and do it both ways. You can't have it both ways. And listen to why I'm saying it. It's not that you can't. It's just that you're not ready to do all of that. You know how many people say, well, I'm a secured party creditor. I'm a creditor. You start talking about the IRS, they clam up. You ain't no damn creditor. Go get a job. Stay on the plantation. Just keep your head low. You know, you're in the way of the people that are really trying to get off the plantation. You know, I didn't have a choice. I had to get off the plantation. And there's nothing to come back to. You know, you find that's me. I mean, you might like the plantation. You know, I don't have a dog in that fight. When I talk to Moors, though, I do have a dog in that fight because I'm trying to see, are you listening to the words that are coming out of your mouth? How are we going to talk about nation building when we ain't got no economics and you don't know nothing about commerce? Nothing. How in the hell can you talk about uplifting fallen humanity when you don't have a business to conduct internationally? As more as we control the spice trade. It makes no sense to me. Call me naive, call me whatever. That has always been the riddle with me, with Moors. Now, when I run to Moors who are business prone and they don't run from this accounting, oh, we have a great time. I have problems with folks that want to throw a rock and hide their hand. I know the other side of the conversation. I get trolls too. Individual will say, well, you know, well, why do the paperwork, you know, it's like, first of all, I'm going to get you out of this whole paperwork concept real fast. You know what? If you're going to deal with their system because you don't have a system of your own, there's only a certain type of paper you should concern yourself with. Collecting taxes should be a given if you're more. I personally, I don't have anything to say whether you collect the taxes or not, but I can say spiritually, if you're more, you're not collecting taxes, I'm kind of like, what the hell are you doing? You know, I say that. Because we control the spice trade. What do you mean? I'm literally asking you to interpret. Exactly, explain that where it makes sense to me. I mean, you're not going to publish a book, do something that you can earn a royalty on? How about this? You ain't got to do all that. Pick something that your ancestors already have invented or created that everybody's using and collect a royalty on that. See, Moors are owed a tributary tax. So anything other than I'm here to collect the tax, if you are Moorish, it baffles me. I hope that kind of helped you out, brother. I'm kind of speaking to people that are new. So you can kind of get it because, see, the accounting is not a mystery. First of all, we the one that invented it. Shouldn't be hard. And really what I'm really saying is, look, take the fundamentals and create something of your own from it. This is not designed for people who are not creators because here's what's going to happen. You're going to wait for me to give you a magic document. And I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a magic document. I can show you how to get $1 million tax return back, but you're not going to get it if you don't do the math. Any other questions? You're brand new, so I want you to ask me some questions at this point. Anything dealing with judgment right now that you got any questions on?
Okay.
Good deal. All right. I'm gonna go down the line. All right. Caller, last four digits of your number is 7128. 7128, if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here to collect.
Okay. So literally, go ahead, brother.
Well, no, I was gonna say, I had a little idea at first, a couple of years, what a default was, but I basically thought it was a,
a case, basically you win or something, and a judge grants you, you know, the default or whatnot. And I just basically thought, from what I was taught from a Native American judge, once he said you can securitize or monetize it, I thought basically it was some kind of bond or a check or something you can just, you know, get
right.
If you win a case. That's what I thought it was.
Right. So that's a good thought. Let's build on that for a second. So just bear with me. I'm just gonna just put you back on mute because I want everybody to hear this. All right.
Okay.
Okay. What you technically want to understand is that everything in commerce in this territory, if it deals with commerce and it is commercial, it is actually a tax. And there are a lot of different types and kinds of taxes. So to name them all, we don't have enough time in this class to do. There are a lot of different kinds of taxes. If it deals with commerce, it is a form of a tax. So the only question when it comes to your judgment is this judgment used to collect the taxes owed to the estate, or the taxes need to be paid to someone else's estate? Am I an indigent servant to someone else's estate, or am I collecting taxes on behalf of my estate? These are the only questions, Moores, you really have when it comes to commerce. Now watch this. If you're not a Moor, then yeah, you got a whole bunch of shit you got to answer and talk about. Why? Because first off, I'm only talking about Moors because most Moors can identify with a nationality. Notice how I'm about to say this. Don't get offended. If you don't know whether you are Moor or you're a non-Moor, the reason why you got to jump through all these hoops is because who are you in commerce? Are you a debtor or are you a creditor? Here's another rule. In commerce, now this ain't part of the legal maxims in the aspect of this admiralty claim that I'm showing you, but it's like a universal principle. It is never what you say in commerce that determines who you are. It is what you do. You don't have to keep telling me every 5 seconds you're a secured party creditor, because if you got to tell me that many times, you're probably not. Because in commerce, it's your action. See, creditors act a certain type of way. Debtors act a certain type of way, too. A debtor will give you every excuse in the book why the bill's too high. A debtor is always going to argue. You know, that's what debtors do. Notice how I'm saying this. When you start going into their courtrooms arguing, are you acting like a creditor or are you acting like a debtor? Now, for my new people, let me help you out. They love when you argue. They know that they get to be God now because I got two private individuals that cannot agree. And they're all emotional and it's who shot John and you did this bad and blah, blah, blah. So because two private people can't agree, now they get to step in and be God. And they're immune now. You know, this is why they don't have a license to practice law, because you give them the license when you refuse to be responsible. See, a creditor is always going to come in and be responsible. You know, this is the approach. One person is going to be mad. The creditor is never – first of all, creditors are never coming to the table upset. Why should they? Everybody can get paid. It's more than enough for everybody to go around. Debtors are always feeling like they've been taken advantage. Somebody did this to me. They stole this. You know how many people – let me explain this to you. If you do your books – a certain type way, no one can never take anything from you. Even when they do, you got a way to recoup it because it's accounting. But when you don't do the math, yeah, you're flying without a safety net. I'm going to give you the example. You got $100 that you just made from your paycheck and you cash your check. You got your paycheck and you cashed it and you got cash. And in your haste to leave the place where you cashed your check, you stuffed your money into your pocket, and one of those $100 bills don't make it to your pocket. It falls on the ground. Watch
this. I want every new person and old person to listen to this analogy, because this is the God honest truth. Presently in accounting today, this is what most don't know. Even though you went to your favorite check cashing place and cashed your check, first of all, when you convert that check to cash, I'm not saying that's a no-no. That's like, okay, you had a gun that you was playing Russian roulette with, but when you cashed your check, you just put two bullets in the chamber. And it's a six shooter now. Cashing the check, you just loaded two bullets in the gun. The $100 bill falls out of your pocket. I'm walking behind you, and I see it fall out of your pocket because I was in line with you when you cashed your check. Listen to me carefully. I pick up the $100 bill, and I put it in my wallet. You realize what I've done. You turn and you confront me. Hey, bro. Give me back my $100 bill. I was like, if this is your $100 bill, then prove it. It's like, man, you was behind me in the check cashing line and blah, 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 and woo, 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 and everything you're saying is right, check, check, check. Watch how I rebut. Tell me the serial number that's on it, and I'll give it back to you. And if you can't tell me the serial number that's on it, that's not yours. Now, again, don't get upset. I'm trying to teach you something. I'm going to go back to my callers. I'm going to pick on a couple of folks. Caller 9280. Did you know that that's how commerce actually works? Caller, last but this year, number is 9280. Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did? Okay. All right. So because you know that's how it works, it's a special thing you do before cashing your check. Am I correct? You know, you, because you know that you're doing some special stuff before you cash a check, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The check has a check number.
Mm-hmm.
And it got a date and everything. So you record that in your ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And put it on as a receivable, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you probably would want to do a A.
Right, a 1099A, correct.
And an OID.
And an OID, correct. Now, again, Corey is one of my older students. He was like in our first class, so he done heard me go through this a million times. Excellent response, Corey. Guys, I want you to understand that if you didn't know that, you don't have a money problem. You have an accounting problem. See, Corey is explaining what creditors do. When they get their check, they ledger it before they do anything with it. See, in commerce, you are supposed to things first before you do anything. But if you're in such a rush to go cash it, you know, I get it. You got bills to pay, whatever. I get that. But see, that's also the problem. See, all that hurrying up has got you where you at right now. We're going to go now back to the admiralty claim because it's going to get real good. We just read number five. Now I want you to go to number six. Number six. Please read this one. Read it numerous times. I'll read it for you. Guaranteed, all men shall have a remedy by due course of law. If a remedy does not exist, or if the existing remedy has not been subverted, then one may create a remedy for themselves and endow it with credibility by expressing it in their affidavit. In parentheses, ignorance of the law might be an excuse, but it is not a valid reason for the commission of a crime when the law is easily and readily available to anyone making a reasonable effort to study the law. That is self-explanatory. I don't think I need to go down the line to see who doesn't understand it. If you don't understand it, you need to study that one before you get into all the other ones. All men shall have a remedy by due course of law. And if there isn't one, if one doesn't exist, or the one that they're giving you has been subverted, then you have a right to what? Create one. That's why we take the accounting approach. Why? Because in this present day system, you are allowed to spend more than what you receive if you do the accounting. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, just go to the debt clock and look up your state revenue. The states are spending more revenue than what they're taking in, which means that's what the fuck you're supposed to be doing. I'm, pardon my language, I'm just a little excited about these facts. They're not stopping you from spending more. You just don't do it. And now you're saying, well, I didn't know. Well, now you know. So if you don't do it, then whose fault is that? Look in the mirror. Number seven says all corporate governments is based upon commercial affidavits, commercial contracts, commercial liens, and commercial distresses. Hence, governments cannot excuse the power to expunge a commercial process. In other words, you have gone through a commercial process if your case has been arbitrated. And all corporate governments are based on commercial affidavits, commercial contracts, commercial liens and distresses, which means they cannot excuse your judgment. I'm going to skip down to my favorite one. All of the ones between number 7 and my favorite one, which is number 14, you need to read and you need to know. But we're going to get to the money shot. Number 14 is what I want everybody looking at. And I'm going to pick someone to – here we go. I'm just going random now. Call the last 4 digits of your number is 1667. If you can see number 14, could you read that to the class so everybody can hear you?
I can't see anything right now.
Oh, can't see it? Okay. All right. Hold that thought. Let me find someone and see who can see it. Let's see. Ooh. Call the last 4 digits of your number is 9659. 9659, can you see number 14?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Can you read that aloud to the class?
It is a tax fraud to use courts to settle a dispute controversy which could be settled peaceably outside of or without the court.
Read it one more time.
It is a tax fraud to use the courts to settle a dispute controversy which could be settled peaceably outside of or without the court.
And I'm going to reiterate it a third time. It is tax fraud to use courts to settle a dispute / controversy which could be settled peacefully outside of or without the court. Let me explain. Whenever someone is trying to do anything in court, they are actually committing what?
Tax fraud.
If you are a notary, if there were vampires and vampires are allergic to garlic, then this is your garlic. If you're dealing with werewolves and they're allergic to silver, this is your silver bullet. This is your garlic to keep the bloodsuckers away. Notaries know that it is tax fraud when anything is in their court system. That's your smoking gun. Remember, you don't have to prove that it's tax fraud. All you got to do is disprove all the stuff they're doing because it is tax fraud. Let me take it one step further. I'm going to put you back on mute, brother, because I'm going to go in for a second. So just bear with me.
right. Okay. Only plaintiffs can only bring up commercial matters. Write this down, new people. A plaintiff in any case, a plaintiff cannot bring up anything in court except for a commercial matter. Wait a minute, Brazil. That's not true. Plaintiffs bring up criminals. No, they don't. Let me explain. You know how something that's in court becomes criminal is when you keep tongue wrestling with these people. You keep arguing with these people. You keep acting dishonorable. It becomes criminal not because of what you are doing. It's because of how you're acting. They take the commercial matter and make it criminal because of your belligerence. Because why? Everybody comes from infinite energy, which means if you owe someone, look, back in the day on the common law, if you owe somebody something, nigga, you had to go work that shit off. Don't get personal. Oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. Look, that's how it used to be. People who really talk about common law, you know, I tell folks this all the time. Just like, you know, I'm not going to brag. I done been to prison before. I know what real criminals are. I'm going to be totally honest with you. Do y'all know that the IRS actually took Al Capone's bookkeeper's method, and that's why you all are exposed to taxes? They locked Al Capone up, and then they took the blueprint and made it where everybody got to do it, which simply meant the government don't like competition. Now, everybody that knows anything about commerce knows that the IRS system came from Al Capone. Everybody knows that. You know, they was upset that Al Capone bookkeeper was really good. You know, they didn't lock Al Capone bookkeeper up either. Y'all do know that. Al Capone went to prison. His bookkeeper got a job. Oh, I'm laughing to keep from crying. So you got to understand that when they take you to court, that's your first test. I'm going to go back to the caller because I may have a question. I'm going to pick this particular caller. Caller, last prediction, your number is 9704, 9704. You got a question or comment?
Yeah, I did. This is Kanar. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. When you Google administrative remedy, mm-hmm. it explains what the administrative remedy is, and then it's only two sentences. The second sentence says, the administrative remedy must be exhausted before the court takes jurisdiction of the case.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right parallel with what you're saying. Now, the question you were asking everybody, I want to try to ask them and tell them right. You're saying,
a judgment.
When it comes down to commercial dealings, period, number 15 on most mortgages talks about the businesses communicate through notice.
Right.
All right, and then, you know, everything's about honor and dishonor. So
right.
I think the United States versus KISS, it's KIS. It says
right.
that all it takes is a simple affidavit to have
right.
to start a prima facie case. So once again, I think it's the laws of the UCC that ultimately hold honor versus dishonor that makes that unrebutted affidavit the truth.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
So I think my answer would have been is does that turn into a credit?
Right. So
yourself,
remember,
like, you know,
right. And to answer that question, it can turn to a credit or a debit, whichever is most applicable to your scenario. You can pick and
okay.
choose whether it's a credit or
which
a debit.
You want it to be.
Right. Because mm-hmm. you're the author. See, when you're the author, you determine the credits and or debits. When you're not the author, somebody else is telling you the credits and debits. It's a choice.
Right.
So,
well,
so
I thought I heard somebody. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of
like
okay.
What I'm doing is that once we get the arbitration is done, you do not need to go get a judge to sign off on it.
Right. You are the – if this is why if you are
yeah.
a notary – you're telling, look, the judge is sitting on the bench. It's like, I should tell folks this all the time in different classes. The judge is actually writing love letters to the notary. That's what he's doing when he's sitting on the bench. He's writing, he's got a, all he's doing is making a recommendation. He's making a recommendation. Even when you're sentenced, when they send folks to jail, listen to this. When you go to jail, the jurisdiction, I'm going to talk about it in Georgia. I'm just going to put you on hold just for a second so everybody can hear. Just bear with me for a second. Hold on. My mouse done slowed down on me. Okay, here we go. I'm going to come back to you. All right. Even when you're sentenced to jail time, all the judge is doing is making a recommendation. Now, watch this. I'm going to talk about Georgia because I'm very familiar with the Georgia system. When you're sentenced to prison, you now are under the jurisdiction of the what? Department of Corrections. They determine how much time you do. Hell, the judge can give you 50 years. Well, they got pardons and parole. And pardons and parole have guidelines. They determine how much time you do, not the judge. It's a recommendation. The only person that has any real authority in what they call a tribunal is the clerk of court. That's the real court. Why do you think the clerk is never in the courtroom? You know why? The judge couldn't be there if she was there or he was there. They're wearing a black robe and pretending to be a sovereign. This is what it is. You guys are actually going to court. You guys are actually going into a bank thinking it's court. And the real court is upstairs with the clerk. When you want to pay off a ticket, you ain't going down there tongue wrestling with the judge. You're going to the clerk. I'm here to settle this. The clerk going to look at the book. Well, I don't have you on here. Bring another witness. I'm here to settle the account. We don't have you on the calendar. Well, listen to how this goes. An unrebutted affidavit stands as fact. So you draw up an affidavit. You present it to the clerk. Is the clerk going to refuse to record your affidavit as part of the case? No. She's going to look at it, especially if it meets the guidelines of UCC. She's going to make that a part of the case. Her making it a part of a case, is the clerk arguing with you about your case? No. She's always accepting because what? It's commerce. Look, every case that she gets and records that's given a case number or a UCC number, it's the equivalent of making a deposit into the court registry investment system. They're a bank. Get over it. You've been lied to. We've all been lied to. The courts are banks. All banks have notaries. The clerk is a glorified notary. She has a checkbook under her desk. She can write checks. See, creditors know when they go to court, you're going downstairs and doing the song and dance. They're going upstairs and collecting checks. And all I'm telling you is that if you're a creditor, you know, I need to draw a map? Like, you're going into their public tribunal expecting something that will never happen a lot of times because they're not doing what you think is happening. They've got to put on a really good show. They're actors. They're actors. So, man, I loved the way Mr. Jones answered that. That was a great response. I'm going to bring you back on, brother. That was a good response. Hopefully what I said kind of helped clear it up and gave you a little more clarity with that. You got any other questions pertaining to the judgment?
No. That's what I needed to know because it kind of makes me mad, you know, the journey that I've taken that every now and then I run across somebody that's supposed to be knowledgeable or whatever, and they still seem to be hung up on the fact, you know, we need to get the judge to sign off on or whatever. You know, the courts have shown me they're totally dishonorable. Totally,
right.
You know, and I've been lucky, man. I you know, before I, you know, met y'all and stuff, mm-hmm. back in 2015, you know, I had mm-hmm. a situation in court, and, you know, I took them. I had two notaries to come and witness.
Mm-hmm.
The judge did remove himself. He recused himself from the bench.
Right, right.
And, you know, because, you know, he kind of saw the writing on the wall. They'll olay it, but then they throw you more grease.
Right,
you know,
right.
The next
right.
actor or whatever, you know.
Right, right. This it's just my experience. I have more. You know, I got losses too in court. So, you know, I'm not going to just sit here and glorify all of the wins. I got way more losses that I want to talk about. Dealing with the court. So from my experience, I get more wins when I talk about accounting, because they don't want to talk about that. And I love talking about it. So I'm coming in the door, accounting ledger in each hand, like, let's do this. You know, they don't like Bezos. They don't like Bezos Bay in any of their jurisdictions because all they want to talk about is Cecil and accounting. And I don't know, you know, and they'll pretend. They're really good pretenders. I don't know what he's talking about, you know. And then they'll do the little song, and it's the same result. It's hot potato. I get in front of one magistrate, he passes it to another magistrate, who passes it to another. Finally, they get somebody too stupid to not know what's going on who interacts with me. And then he finds himself like, why is my bond being forfeited? And why I got commercial liens on me? It's like, look, dude, you didn't see this stuff coming? He came in the door with accounting ledgers like, duh, something finna happen, you know, in my experience. I try to get clients to look at the fact that they're doing accounting in your face and not telling you, because commerce is not, you know, everybody who knows commerce is happening, they ain't got to discuss it. They know what's going on. My mentor, he one of the things he showed me is that if you bring me an attorney and not an accountant, every attorney who comes through that door, we're going to eat their lunch. And I used to sit there like, you know, and these were like some of, this is like back in the 90s where they had like some, I've seen some of the best legal firms go down in flames because the accountant is always agreeing. He just wants substantiation. This is where the deal gets done tonight. It's like, okay, we agree to do this, this, that, and the other, as long as you can what? Put it in writing. And let me see your ledger. Let's transfer this to your ledger. Now, here's the problem. All these lawyers aren't practicing commerce. They're not practicing accounting. And then when you step into that particular office, you got to be an expert domestic and international. They already know they got you 2 out of 3 coming and going. It's only when the other side brought an accountant in where it was really, you know, a really quick, pleasurable meeting. If they came in with lawyers, the lawyers were pissed because they got exposed. And the firm is saying, why the fuck did we hire you? This guy didn't have an attorney. He had an accountant. What do you mean? He's like, well, he acts, you know, do you know how many people are in commerce right now that have never read Operating Circular 10? Write this down, new people. Operating Circular 10 is the operating manual for commerce in the present-day banking system. Operating Circular 10. The Banking Secrecy Act, most of the rules of the BSA come from the Operating Circular. This Operating Circular ain't for banks. Just for banks? Well, let me be real clear. I got a lot of new people, so just bear with me, Mr. Jones. I'm going to kind of help the new people out here. Whether you know this or not, the system has labeled you as a financial institution. And so even though you ain't got an EIN number that says you're a bank or a financial institution, in commerce, you're considered a financial institution. And under the Banking Secrecy Act, this manual spells out how every financial institution is supposed to be conducting business in commerce. Every financial institution is required to fill out a currency transaction report prior to conducting your transaction. It doesn't say some of the time. It says prior to every commercial transaction, you are required to complete and conduct a currency transaction report that is conducting the CTR can determine whether that CTR is a SARS report, which is a suspicious activity report. Every CTR that's being done is always called a SARS when you don't what? Attach your accounting to the CTR. So let me be real clear. The Banking Secrecy Act has already made you an enemy of the system, and you didn't know it. And because you think you know what's going on, you got all of the evidence against you. You got it in your possession. You know, remember, you say you want to be a creditor, but you really won't. You just want the benefit. You know, you still want to collect the benefits. You still want to collect Social Security. You want to be the social. You want to spend lawful legal money when it's convenient, but you want to benefit from the government too. You know, and heaven forbid if you're melanated and you're talking like that. I ain't saying you're talking crazy. I'm just saying it's sending all kind of messages commercially. Like, how many of you guys actually know the reason why in our present day system, how many of you guys actually know people who have the last name Johnson, Erickson, Ellison, Stevenson, Jackson? Do you know that that name was used in commerce to legitimize illegitimate children? Because, see, Jack was an upright individual in the commercial system. But Jack had some children out of wedlock. So to legitimize them, these were Jack's sons. Till this day, there are a lot of our people with these appellations doing all kind of stuff in commerce. The Social Security card say don't give that number to your grandma, and you got all kind of credit cards. By the way, for those of you that actually have credit cards, do you guys ever remember when you got the credit card, did you have to send in a photo ID to verify your identity when you established the credit card? This is just I'm curious. I don't know. You know, I'm in the private in that capacity, so this is just. It sounds like an ignorant question. I'm just going to ask. I'm going to ask the question. Caller 9659. Have you ever applied or ever had a credit card before?
Yes, I have.
Hello? 9659. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear. Can you hear me?
I know what happened. Hello? Hold on. Yeah, every time I get excited, they let me bring you back on, brother. Hold on. I got you. Ain't that by the blimp. Wow. Okay, here we go. I'm finna come bring it back. There you go. All right. I can hear you now, brother. 9659. Can you hear me? Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, brother. I can hear you now. Okay. Okay, have you ever applied for a credit card before?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Last time you dealt with applying for a credit card, was you required to send in a photo ID when you acquired the credit card?
No, not at all. They have all the information in the database already.
You know, that's interesting, you know, because somewhere I read, you know, call me crazy. See, I do a lot of arbitrations. I deal with these cases. You know, like a lot of folks, they know what their favorite sports team's stats are. I read case law. I get excited about stuff like that. I read a case where Visa and MasterCard lost a class action suit in 2017. And so they actually owe everyone that actually has ever gotten a credit card about $20,000 in the settlements because they actually issued that information without first substantiating your identity because they got to properly identify each person that they issue credit to. And if they didn't ask for your photo ID, how do they know who they're dealing with? That's how they lost the case.
Right.
Somebody did an arbitration case. I'm going to kind of give you the spiel. It's a private case, but if you actually have access to LexisNexis, and you're willing to spend $2,500, you can find the case. Other than that, you're not going to Google it because they don't want you Googling this stuff. they lost the case. I'm going to say it that way. And so what they did was in 2019, before COVID, right around Christmas time, on social media, You had a special IP address. Yeah, I'm saying it right. Yeah, you had a you. If you were in the United States, I don't want to get y'all in trouble. If you had a VPN and you accessed Facebook, you saw the advertisement. If you were in the States and you didn't have a VPN, you didn't see the advertisement. But they had to put it on Facebook, Twitter. They did it internationally, but they purposely excluded everybody from the United States unless you had a VPN on this finding. And they did it in 2019.
Wow.
And see, right now, the rest of the world already knows. So you got to kind of flip it. I'm going to kind of say this in a way where everybody can follow it. Everybody who saw that advertisement is perplexed on why in the hell we haven't collected on that lawsuit. And I just explained the reason why most haven't, because they didn't know. You know, unless you got a LexisNexis subscription, that's the only way you're going to really know. They started about $25,000 to $5,000 a month. So if you got $2,500 to $5,000 a month to buy the subscription for LexisNexis, you kind of see where I'm going with this?
Right.
You know, that's all they got to do. But if you received, if you've been issued a credit card, whether it's a secured or unsecured, each institution, both Visa and MasterCard, owe you about $25,000 apiece, minimally. It's a class action suit. Now, most blue chip or most Fortune 500 corporations and entities, they know this. They've been collecting it. Maybe that's why they don't advertise it like that, you know. Maybe those type of CEOs can afford the $25,000 to $5,000 a month subscription to LexisNexis. You know, that's just me speculating. I'm just saying. But that's just what interests. I just want to put that question out there. Because a lot of people didn't know that. Well, I'm picking on you, brother. Any questions thus far? Because I'm finna get real deep in a minute. I ain't got deep yet. I'm getting there. Any questions thus far?
I had one question. I said, when you apply for a credit card, is it correct that if you get turned down, your information is still out there somehow? They access your account on the back end.
If you read the fine print, the devil is always in the details. See, most of these places where you give information to, they're telling you we're finna share it with everybody and then some. That's why, I'll give you an easy one. If there are institutions that if you can show you've been denied credit 3 times, they automatically give you one on the 4th time. You know, if you can show that you've been denied credit 3 times, then there's agencies that are guaranteed to give it to you on the 4th because you've been denied 3 times. I can't get into the legal way you can do it, but there exists, if you can show that you've been denied credit 3 times, there are a whole plethora of institutions that if you can demonstrate, if you can show you where you've been denied credit, they'll point you in the direction where you can obtain it. See, it's metadata. They got to have so many denials to use other programs. But they know who they want to push the debt to, so you got to understand it, you know. We do so much. You know, when you apply for your credit card, how did you do it? Did you do it online? Did you do it over the phone? How did you do it? I'm just curious. I'm interested because I'm just interested in the responses.
95% of the time it's done online.
Done online. Are you required to send any documentation?
Nope. Just, so they already got your whole thumbprint, DNA, the whole nine.
Wow. Interesting. Hey, any other questions for me? Any other questions you got right now?
No. No, sir.
All right. Okay. Look, we're finna jump right back into the admiralty claim because remember, if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. Number 14 was my favorite because notaries always remember that if they're going to court, they're committing tax fraud. Now it's about how you want to use that to your advantage. Everybody that actually has done arbitration, I want you for the next 7 days to go to this affidavit of obligation, these legal maxims 1 through 32, and just read them. Read them aloud. Read them to yourself. Meditate on them. And then, after you do that, then take in consideration what you meditated on and make it applicable to that commercial situation. The reason why is because these maxims are kind of going to keep you in the right state of mind to know how to bring forth remedy. The next document that I want you to look at, we're going to come back to this admiralty claim, but for introduction purposes for this class, please study the affidavit of obligation. This is a commercial lien, and this is a verified plain statement of facts. This is facts. This is not fiction. This is what everybody's supposed to know when they're in commerce. All right, next document that I'm going to go over is actually going to be the accounting manual. And I think the accounting manual inside of this particular layout, I think it's going to begin with the number 514. So you're looking for the document inside of the Bitrix that starts out with 514. I want you to now go to that document. I want you to bring that document up. And once you get that document open and you got it in front of you, I'm going to tell you which part of this we're going to go over. All right, so let's find the page number. It's going to be page number, let's see. I want to start with page number 2. And we're going to read the last paragraph of page number 2. Page number 2, the last paragraph. I want you to be able to really see what I'm putting down here. They say seeing is believing. Keep listening long enough, you're going to learn something. So let's talk about the last paragraph on page number 2. And I'm going to read it so we can kind of get through this, and I'm going to show you something. This paragraph starts out, it says, to distinguish accounting principles from the sense in which the terms principles is used in physical science, various other terms like postulates, concepts, conventions, doctrines, tenets, maxims, assumptions, etc., have been used by writers of accounting theory. Instead of wasting our time to discuss the precise meaning of these generic terms, we should concern ourselves with the significance and the importance of these ideas in a particular work of the accountants. However, a slight distinction is made between the two terms, which is labeled concepts and conventions. Let's talk about the term concept. The term concept is used to connote the accounting postulates, i.e. necessary assumptions and ideas which are fundamental to the accounting practice. While on the other hand, the term convention is used to signify customs or traditions as a guide to preparing the accounting statements. So, I'm going to sum it up. Our world of accounting and commerce is literally in two zones. One zone deals with concepts. The other zone deals with conventions. I want you to focus on the concept because they use this word connote. Connote is the root word for connotative. So, concepts are a connotative position. So let's define what connotative means. We're going to say that connotative is the definition they want you to use, and the denotative is the definition that it actually means. Say that again, Bazelle. You just lost me. Okay. The word concept is used to connote the accounting postulates, necessary assumptions, and ideas, which are fundamental to accounting practice. So whenever you say an accounting concept, you're really using the definition that they want you to use. But when you understand that it's really a convention, now your truth is heavily fundamentally rooted in what? Customs and traditions. 99% of the slaves in our system, they think that cash, the cash method of accounting, is a concept. Those of you that are looking at the manual, look at the last sentence and the 11 accounting concepts. And I'm going to ask you, these are considered the important, generally accepted concepts. Do you see cash concept, the cash method of accounting concept, in any of the 11 important concepts? And I'm going to go, because again, my eyes ain't what they used to be. I could be totally full of it. I might make me seeing what I think I'm seeing. I'm just saying. Let's see. Here we go. All right. If you can hear me, call the last four digits of your number is 4630. And looking at that manual, is there a concept that talks about the cash method of accounting on that list?
No, Brother Bay, I don't believe it is.
Okay. I'm just checking. I mean, maybe I overlooked it. So we'll consider that these 11 concepts are what we consider in the industry as the important ones, and cash is not included as an important concept.
No, it's not. But here's a question, though.
Right.
If I had my own accounting method that, let's just say, me
right.
and my board of trustees or the board
right.
of trustees created, and it made sense, we could substantiate it. Who's
right.
to say that's not a real accounting method?
Right. Remember, we're saying the accounting concepts are the connotative. This is like what everybody in commerce, this is the definition that they want to put in your mouth. This is the definition that the IRS want to put in your mouth. This is the concept that everybody that's in commerce, they want everybody to agree to. So you're so right in what you're explaining. You're more right. You're more righteous than rain in what you're saying.
Okay, but if everybody doesn't agree to it.
Right. If you do something privately, it's not for everybody to what agree upon. It has nothing to do with them.
Yeah. True.
Here's where people get in trouble. If you're using Federal Reserve notes and they're telling you these are the accepting concepts and cash is not one of them, Houston, you got a problem, don't you?
Yep. Yeah. Because the Federal Reserve note is someone else's meme.
Right.
Someone else's
right.
paper. Someone else's
right.
belief system, not mine.
Right. Here's what's most ironic. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Here's what's most ironic. The IRS commissioner in 1985 wrote an article in Inc. magazine where he let the cat out of the bag and said, cash is more of a convention than a concept. This is why the IRS is going after everybody, because it's really based on customs and traditions. You know why? Before you had paper that people was calling money, your ancestors used seashells and furs as money. It's just a recent concept. I meant tradition. Oops, I meant customs. I mean, hell, don't believe what I'm saying. How many of you guys actually, I just want you to see that. Now, the next document, because I'm not here to, truth is not up for debate. You know, after today, you're not going to have the excuses I didn't know. You're going to be like, okay, oh, shit, I can't say that. I know now. We went over this last night. I want you to go to Modern Money Mechanics. I want you to go to the document that talks about money, modern money mechanics. Bring that one up. All right, we're going to talk about modern money mechanics. I want you to look at this beautiful bean footage. And as we look through modern money mechanics, and we're going to talk about this particular publication that used to be published by the Federal Bank of Chicago, I'm going to go to this will be the second page. Let's see, first page. Yeah, let's go to the second. Matter of fact, let's look at the first page and come down to where the paragraph starts, where it talks about what is money. Everybody should be able to see that. And so if you can see that, I want you to follow along, because if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. Here's the question. What is money? If money is viewed simply as a tool used to facilitate transactions, only those media that are readily accepted in exchange for goods, services, and other assets need to be considered. Many things, from stones to baseball cards, have served this monetary function through the ages. I'm going to stop. This is the Federal Reserve telling you what you should already know. This is not Bazell. I didn't make this shit up. It's what they already know. Let's go back. Today in the United States, money used in transactions, let's be real clear, money used in transactions is mainly of three kinds. Currency, in parentheses, paper money, and coins in the pockets and purses of the public, demand deposits, which are non-interest-bearing checking accounts in banks, and the third, other checkable deposits, such as negotiable order of withdrawal, or what they call NOW accounts, at all depository institutions, including commercial and savings banks, savings and loans associations, and credit unions. Traveler's checks also are included in the definition of transactions money. Since $1 in currency and $1 in checkable deposits are freely convertible into each other, and both can be used directly for expenditures, they are money in equal degree. However, only the cash and balances held by the non-bank public are counted in the money supply. Deposits of the U.S. Treasury, depository institutions, foreign banks and official institutions, as well as vault cash in the depository institutions, are excluded. Now, I hope everybody can get in because we're now in overtime. And if you're not in this class, they're going to have to hear about it because they can't call in right now. I hope everybody's following along because this is interesting. All right. I just read that the institution is only counting the money that you're dealing with, not the money that they're dealing with. And I want to know how many people, you know, like, again, you will not be able to say after tonight's class you didn't know this. But I need to now know before I go any further, especially with the notaries, did you know that fact? Caller, last four digits is 9704. What I just read, did you know that?
Not necessarily.
Okay. All right. All right. See, it's understood. The Federal Reserve is telling you up front. That's why they stopped publishing. This was the last article they published before they stopped publication. The Federal Reserve is saying, look, bro, you don't have a money problem. You got an accounting problem. Because, see, we only talk about your money, not our money. You know, see, we know what we're doing. We're doing accounting. You're not. See, anybody that don't know what they're doing in commerce, they got to put an insurance policy on you because you might hurt yourself. That's why all of your accounts, when you're not an institutional investor, they got to give you some insurance. You guys have heard of FDIC, right? You've heard of FDIC, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is why they have to – and notice, FDIC is not for you. It's for what? It's for them. You know, it's not, you know, listen to how I'm saying this. If you really knew how to do accounting, that insurance policy, you would be using it in all your transactions because you don't know any better. You don't. The Federal Reserve just told you we're not using the real money. We're using all the money you're creating because you're the one that has the liability. You're a liability to us. That's why we got to put insurance on the accounts. The only reason why we're going to deal with you is not because you're good, it's because it's insured. Did you know that how much is FDIC insurance?
About what is
how
it
much,
up to?
What does it cover? Up to what?
What's 100,000, right?
100,000, 250,000. We'll say 250. We'll say for laughs and giggles, it's 250. All right. So let's just do some common sense. I want, because I got a lot of new people, and I want them to, because, again, they cannot say after the night they didn't know this. If you got more than $250,000 in the bank, if you got more than $250,000, they are not responsible. They already done told you they don't even count their money. They're counting your shit. You know why? Because for every dollar that they give you, they get to create 10 out of thin air. Hell, I don't need – if I got that kind of racket, I'm not worried about you. I just need you playing the game. Hell, we're making money by – look, every time you want to play a game, you got to buy the cards. We're making money off of selling you the deck of cards you're playing. We don't care what game you play. Just as long as you play. Last night's class, you learned that you couldn't even take the Federal Reserve note back to the Federal Reserve, right? I want you to think about that. Damn, the place where I got it won't even take it back. I can't drive up to the Federal Reserve in Atlanta and just turn this shit back in. They will not take it. Let me show you the play for the new people. The Federal Reserve printed the money and they loaned it to the bank. And then the bank gave it to you. And the bank's got an insurance policy with your name on it that they using because you won't. The Fed is supplying everybody the dope. The bank is the one that touched the dope, and you're the junkie. And the feds are saying, well, we can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs. What are we going to do? And the bank is like, well, what do you mean? What are we going to do? Y'all remember that cartoon, Pinky and the Brain? You ever seen that before? Pinky and the Brain. Y'all remember that cartoon? How you should always start. What are we going to do today? We'll take over the world. That's what they're doing. It's like, look, these people are so behind the curve. They got a $250,000 policy that they won't even use. How many of you guys ever heard of the Frank Dodd Act? Y'all remember that act that they passed? The Dodd and Frank Act, the Frank and Dodd Act? You know, I might be saying it wrong. Are you familiar with that, Mr. Jones, the Frank and Dodd Act?
I've heard of it.
Okay. Well, they created that act to take you out of your position as a creditor because you've been sitting on this $250,000 policy for so long. They've made so much money. They got to legally nudge you off of your square. So here's what they did. The Frank and Dodd Act acknowledged the fact that that account that is called an insurance policy is really a liability account for the bank. It's a credit that's owed to you, but you refuse to do the accounting, so they're going to use it. That is literally a smoking gun that says you ain't did your accounting. You got this $250,000 asset. Notice, they just told you that cash only has a value because they said it has a value. The real value is the insurance that's behind it because it ain't backed by what, gold and silver no more. See how they played the game? Your cash at one point could be redeemed by the treasury. And you fell asleep behind the wheel, and they have seeped out all the last little bit of value in it. That's why if you got $1 million in cash in a bank account, you only got $30,000 of buying power because every dollar is only worth 0.03. It's only worth 3 cents. When the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank printed this last article, they said, and I quote, "We have done all we can do." We even printed that they are not an account holder. When they look at their checkbook, those of you that got a checkbook, I don't know how many people got a checkbook, but don't take my word for it. Get your checkbook out. Get a magnifying glass. Look at the line that you signed. It's not a line. It's just the word authorized representative written over and over and over again in micro print. They printed it on a check that you're an authorized representative of that insurance policy, and you're too stupid to see it. I'm not being facetious. We're clearing up stuff because, you know, we're going to have a different conversation tomorrow. They printed it on the checks. Hell, why do you think they won't give the checks back to you these days? Because they're securities. If you ever notice they tell you to void a check after 90 days because it's not a check no more, it's a security. You know you can trade securities on the stock exchange, right? You do know that, right? See, you don't have a money problem. You got an accounting problem. You're a financial institution, don't even know it. And they've been talking around this and creating legislation. Look, the proof of everything that I'm talking about right now that's in effect, which is not included in the stuff that I told you to download or I put in this, but I talk about it all the time, just Google HR 5404. Just Google it. Google HR 5404. And I want you to take HR 5404, download it on your computer, and use these documents to clean up how you're supposed to be using this judgment that you got. It's not me telling you which way you should go. It's you deciding on which way works best for your estate because you've chosen a method that works best for you. Like, I'm going to kind of show you how it'll work for both of us. I'm going to ask you, what is the net asset value of the estate? Most of you don't know what the NAV is. I know you don't. I'm going to put you on blast. I'm just going to assume you don't know your NAV. So in order for me to help you, you got to tell me what your NAV is. How do you determine net asset value? For everybody that has at least gotten to the point where they've already enrolled into the Law of Nations course, they're in our accounting course, and you are a notary, and you're still oscillating between what to do. I want you to send me a request in the Bitrix. I'm going to send you a DCF model. Let me see. I think I got Miss Victoria because she I think she was like one of the last ones I really looked at. She did a really good one. Let's see if I can bring her on. Miss Victoria, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Brazil.
Okay. Victoria, I'm just using you as an example because you did a really good DCF model, the last one I kind of looked at. I want you, for all the notaries, here's what I want you guys to do. Victoria is in our Bitrix space. Is it okay for them to send you a request to kind of see how you did your DCF?
Sure.
I mean, you can sanitize the document, you know, but
yeah.
So that way everybody will have – right. So everybody that's in the Bitrix space, if you want to know how to do a DCF model, because Victoria's been with us. She's done a few arbitration cases. You know, she did a real solid one. She'll share with you what she's used. What I want you guys to do, because that DCF model is going to determine your NAV. Once you have your NAV, I'm just going to put you back on hold for just a second. Once you guys determine NAV, now it's about just picking the accounting concept that works best. Your NAV is supposed to be of a certain range. I'm going to give you the parameters. 32 to 36% of what you show, the system is designed to tax you at that rate. So we're going back to the accounting concepts and conventions, the connotative accounting concepts that is accepted by everybody across the board in accounting is designed to exploit 32 to 36% of what you report. But guess what? If you do it a certain type of way, it can go up to 42. Here's a hint, trustee. If your NAV is right at 32 to 36, you're in the green zone. You're in the friend zone. If your NAV is at 42, Lucy, you got a lot of explaining to do. It's not a bad thing. I'm now asking questions like, damn, if your NAV is like 40%, show me your accounting method. You know, it's like, okay, if I see the DCF and it's at a certain range, I'm not going to ask for extra. You know, I don't want to see you how you got the answer. I kind of can generalize it. If you really can nail this thing down where your NAV is higher than 42, we need to talk. You really don't understand what you just did. In other words, I want to know how you came to that rate so I can point to all of the other charts of accounts that you can use. In order for me to help you help us, the DCF model answers the question of NAV. Whatever NAV you show on this DCF will determine how many different types of chart of accounts you can use in a said transaction or equation. I know I kind of said that a lot of different ways. I hope I spark you to ask some questions. So I'm going to start from the top of the list and go down. A DCF model, and I think Ms. Victoria, she's on our Bitrix link. You can reach out to her. She'll let you see how she came up with hers. Use that as a working template to apply that to your accounting. Here's the rule. 32 to 36 is the sweet spot. That's like, okay, if you're doing that, I now know if it's at least 36 to 32%, I can get back minimally 60% of whatever you show me. But if you get to 42, I can almost get it all back. We just got to lay it out. We got to lay out the roadmap. So with what I'm saying, I want to now ask questions on who doesn't understand the importance or the applicability of how this is being done. And I'm going to go from the top to the bottom. Caller, last prediction, your number is going to be 9704, if you can hear me. You got any questions of anything I just explained at that particular point? 9704, if you can hear me.
Repeat that again. I'm sorry.
Okay. If you use a DCF model and you're able to nail your ratio between 32 to 36%, that lets me know that 60% of whatever you are putting on your ledger, we can bring back to the estate. If you get it over 42, now I want to see how you came up with that, because there's a whole lot more that we can do. You know, if you're at a 32 to 36, I can tell you mentally how to get 60% of what you got out there back. If you get 42 and above, I can almost get it all back. But I need to find out specifically, what are you doing? How did you derive at that? The DCF model is actually, all right, so see, the DCF model is a discount cash flow model. So it's allowing you to take the cash that presently doesn't have a value and it's a liability and showing it as an asset. The only way a cash can be called an asset, if you got to recoup the value that you're losing. That's why it's called a discount cash flow model, hence the acronym DCF, or, you know, discount, you know, a discount cash flow model. In other words, it's you're showing the value of the dollar and how it being depreciated, and you're recouping that depreciation back onto a proponent, which the difference between those two numbers is your net asset value, and it's going to be a percentage. For example, money that you have been spending is already being taxed before you even receive it. Why? Because the Federal Reserve lent it to the bank. That's a procedure on its own. So it was taxed one time there. Now, when the bank got it, it had to report it to the IRS. It was taxed a second and third time. The bank charged you fees, which are nothing more than what? Taxes. And when you bought a pack of cigarettes, don't you pay taxes? That's four times. That's excessive taxation. So anytime there's excessive taxation, you're entitled to get back minimally 60% of what you spent because it was excessively taxed. You just got to demonstrate it in your accounting. And the DCF model does that. That's why I'm asking, what is your net asset value? See, right now, the dollar is only worth 3 cents, which means 97 cents out of a dollar is what you're supposed to be getting back. That's why your local governments, like the state of Georgia, can bring in $8 million and spend 12. They didn't spend enough. And if they didn't spend enough, hell, you haven't spent enough. If you're doing the accounting, the system is set up that way. That's why they penalize you when you're trying to, you know, be a debtor and be a victim and, you know, all that other stuff. They ain't got time for all that. They don't immediately haul you off to prison. They just tax the hell out of you. Now, if you keep talking, they're going to throw you in jail too. And they ain't holding you. And this is how they're going to tell you. When they lock you up and take you to jail, oh, it's not personal, it's business. They're holding your body in lieu. They're holding your body as a lien. They get $300+ a day for every day they hold you. And that's every day you're inside the prison, probation, parole. It's accounting. See, the DCF model is designed to show that depreciation. So what I'm literally saying is use the example that Miss Victoria has put together to apply it to as your ledger. So when we talk, Bazell, my NAV is this. All right, now I'm geared up. I'm already got my books out. I'm ready to get it. Until we get there, I'm trying to get you there so we can get it done. Like, if I take your books right now and I determine NAV, you're lost in space. Here's what's dangerous. Some of us are so comfortable with letting somebody else do it. I can't testify in front of the federal government on what you're doing. The only thing I can say is I can testify that you were sane when you did it, and you understood what you was doing. At least that's the impression you gave me. You didn't appear to be under the influence of anything, and you seemed to be pretty, you know, sane at the time. You know, that's the only thing I can testify to. I can't say what you said or did was wrong. I'm not an authority. That's your estate. So in essence, what I'm saying with the DCF model is use that to quantize, cleanse, to straighten up what you're doing with your book so we got a firm foundation to go forward with. I'm giving you the ranges because that's how it warrants my attention, if that makes sense. I'm very interested with everybody that has a DCF and an NAV that's over 40%, 42% to be exact. If it's over that, I'm interested. Like, okay, what do you want to do? Like, some folks have actually gotten a very high NAV. They just ain't figured out how to push it out. And what I mean by that is they got the accounting. They got it to a degree. Like, they got it. How do I get it? How do I give it to the other person? And this is where I say you kind of you're overthinking the process. First off, once you have got, if you can determine NAV, you're pretty competent when it comes to commerce. And to make, and so don't abandon that. Look, if you had to do all that math to figure out the NAV, then whoever else you're finna deal with got to at least what? Do the same so you can what? Finish the transaction. I can't tell everybody that because if I did, everybody on this call ain't notaries, first off. That's why I can't tell everybody that. I think, Mr. Jones, you are a notary now, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I'm not out of bounds and out of pocket.
Since yesterday.
Right,
now,
right. It's okay. Right. So I'm not out of pocket for at least telling you that because you are under notarial law as we speak. You've already taken your oath of office, so I'm in compliance. So it's not about what they say. It's about what you know. Never stop marching. Don't start marching to someone else's beat when you're the one that set the cadence. You're calling the cadence now. And you're only required to do certain things when you're calling the cadence. You know, the drill sergeant ain't going to stop the whole drill because you don't know your fucking left foot from the right foot. He's going to pull you out of line. You're going to beat your face. And, you know, you're going to have to do some extra stuff because you messing everybody else up. We got stuff to do. You know, that's how you are when you're a creditor. It's like, all right, for those that can't add, get out of line. Those that can add this up. You know, that's how you're doing. So it's like in all of your endeavors, you're telling them, I use this model to determine NAV. So I at least need you to do that so I can see where you're coming from. So I can help you. You can't ask for another person's NAV if you hadn't done it yourself. You can't ask for another person's CTR unless you've done it yourself. These are the two free ones I can give because everybody might not be notaries, so I don't want to get them in trouble. So those are the things that keep everybody marching to your tempo or cadence. There is a question I hope will come up. I'm going to go down the line. Any other questions? Mr. Jones, you got any other questions?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Let's go down the line because I'm hoping I may get somebody may go there. Caller, last four digits of your number is 9659. Call and see if you got any questions, comments, or concerns of anything we covered up until this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the DCF model and just trying to, you know, take it all in because, you know, just learning what you've just been talking about, 32 to 36% is a sweet spot. If you got over 42%, you got to kind of explain. And if you can explain, you can get basically 100% back.
Right. Because, see, you know, they – right. And just to kind of add to that, it's because we're in a debt – we're actually presently in a debt system – transitioning back into a precious metal system. That's why I said just look at H.R. 5404 to understand they came up with a new accounting standard because we're going back to a gold standard. And that's going to wipe out a lot of people because, see, when you move from a debt system to an asset system, you can have an 800 beacon score. That ain't going to mean nothing because people are going to ask you what kind of assets do you have. And you can't list your Air Jordans and your Gucci bag. That's not an asset. You know, what you show on that balance sheet is what an asset is. And an asset, for those of you that still don't know what an asset makes money for you. A liability takes money away from you. That's how you know the difference between the two. If it's making money for you, it's an asset. If it's taking money out your pocket, it's a liability. So creditors are going to ask the question. I don't care about credit. I'm going to ask you, well, what assets do you control? List me 10 assets, and we'll lend you X, Y, and Z based on those assets. Now, watch this. When you say you got this asset and that asset, you're going to literally have to literally go into the fact that if I call whatever I got an asset, I got to be able to substantiate that. And here's a clue. If you use fiat to acquire an asset in a gold-based system, you do not control that asset because fiat is not what? Backed by anything. It's called a faith-based currency. When our faith shifts back to gold, anything you use fiat for is irrelevant. See now why when you don't do the accounting, we go back to that dollar scenario that I used. Even though the dollar fell out your pocket, you don't know what the serial number is on it. And I can walk away quietly into the night because you couldn't substantiate what you had. And ignorance of that is no excuse. Notice how my other student answered the question. Before I cash my check, I record it. You know, he's not just saying that. You know, this is kind of something he does. You know, he been in class longer. That's kind of abnormal to most because most people just go ahead and just cash a check. Hell, some folks get direct deposit. They get vouchers. This is what blows my mind. People who get direct deposits and get vouchers don't know they're supposed to be turning those vouchers into securities. That blows my mind. It blows my mind because there's a reason why the bank or the institution is sending you those vouchers. They're not just sending it for your records. They're actually, that's your evidence of a security. That's in existence. Have you ever used a voucher or a coupon before, sir? Have you used one before?
Yes, I have.
You have? All right. You know, like when you use a voucher or a coupon, like let's say you got a voucher for a gallon of bleach. You know, when you go to your local grocery store, you give the cashier the voucher, right? And she scans the voucher, and then she puts the voucher in the cash register, and then you walk out of the store with the item. They give you the voucher, right? That's what you're supposed to be doing. All the vouchers that you get with your direct deposit. It's the same thing. You don't have a money problem. You got an accounting problem. Notice how Corey responded with his last response. Then you do an OID. I think a lot of you guys might have missed that. But just FYI, we don't have a money problem. We got an accounting problem. Any other questions of anything you've heard up until this point?
No other questions.
All right. Let's go down the line. Caller, last four digits of your number is 0301. I'm picking on Miss Victoria today. Any questions of anything you've heard of until this point?
The couple people who reached out to me, I am driving. I'll get to you this with the evening's out.
All right. All right. Good deal. Good deal. She'll definitely get to you as soon as she gets stationary. All right. That'll work. We'll go down the line. We'll go down the line. Let's see. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is 1667. 1667. Do you got any questions, comments, or concerns of anything we discuss or you've heard up until this point? Last 4 digits of your number is 1667. Can you hear me? That's okay. That's okay.
I'm taking notes. I'm just taking notes. I'm listening and taking notes.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. That'll work. All right. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is going to be 4630. 4630. I'm checking in to see if you got any questions, comments, or concerns.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I have a question. So, okay, when I did my DCF model, and I was at like the 42%, and you were like, nah, you got to take this back down to the lower percentage. So I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with being able to...
Let me tell you why. I'm glad you called in.
I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on. I knew what I was supposed to do. I'm supposed to receive 100% or close to that coming back into the estate, right? Or to the to that particular account, right?
Right. So watch this. In order for you to show that you have conveyed that credit back to the estate, you need to terminate your UCCs. You haven't terminated your UCCs yet. So you got them in. You got it, but that's why I'm like, break it back.
I thought you had to do the ledgering first. That's what I was doing. I was doing the accounting part first. So you said, so you can just say, go terminate them UCCs first, sis?
Listen to what I'm saying. Remember, this is your estate. You got to know why I'm telling you to back it down. Because remember our conversation. I'm asking you for other information. I'm trying to see if you understand presentment. Because if you're a creditor and you're doing things, the UCCs, they're showing the ebb and flow. Like, here's what gets a lot of creditors in trouble. They think Equifax, TransUnion, and all these alphabet agencies are just going to miraculously just wake up tomorrow and just start reporting. You're the creditor, so it doesn't stop. Any reporting, you're going to spark that conversation. So even when you terminate the UCC, you're then on as the creditor. Like every UCC that a creditor has terminated, you can now have that come to Jesus phone call with Experian and TransUnion and Equifax because you terminated the UCC as a creditor. That means the deal is done. That can be a positive trade line that can be reported. You know what that looks like on an accounting ledger? That's like having the canceled check, or let me say it another way. That's like having a check that you've held for over 90 days and is now a security that you're putting into the Bloomberg system. You got the evidence in your hand. All I was saying was if you want to get all of it back, I need you to get it to the other side. Until you get it all to the other side, you got the right concept. Now let's close it. Let's terminate those other UCCs that substantiate that above 42% rate. Now, any instrument that you put into the Bloomberg space, anybody who has access to the terminal and know how to access those keys, that's what we call it in the industry. They know how to use the keys. They can move it from point A to point B. Because, see, that math and that DCF is what they're going to see in that terminal. And if it's over 42, they're going to want to see what? That termination. You know, they need something to go and do the deal, if that makes sense to you. So all I was simply doing is that because I didn't see it and you wouldn't give me the answer I was looking for, let's scale it down some. because
but
in my, I don't
okay,
want...
if we're in class, though, and I'm not giving you the answers that you're looking for, I mean, I kind of need you to say, okay, go look or go read this and see if you can come up with the right answer, because I don't, I mean, I don't know, and then it's like pockets of information that I have, but I'm not finished tying it all together. So
right.
It's like a lot, I'm still kind of moving around with blinders on like a robot.
Right.
You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right.
So
and this is... And this is why I'm doing this class tonight, so you will not have this excuse, and I won't have this excuse anymore, because you will know. That's why I'm going to leave no stone unturned tonight. I'm going to go over all the things. I got a long laundry list of just things that helps you nudge what you're doing to the other side, because a lot of you guys are already there. It's just you're thinking there's something else that somebody else has to do. And in most of you guys' cases, you've already done it. Now, all I'm asking you to do is that, okay, you need to know what you've done. So I know sometimes when I come back to you and I ask questions, like, damn, if I say this way, listen, I'm literally listening for, I need to know that you can explain this to a three-year-old. I know what you mean, but I'm not going to be the one in the middle of that transaction. One thing about me, and I had to, and I say this over and over again, what has got me in trouble is whenever I try to do anything outside of my trust res. And so I have vowed I am not doing anything outside the res. There's a reason why I might have, you know, have you noticed if I have never asked you for your trust res, there's a reason why I've never said, told you to send me over your trust res. Because at that
That's
point.
That's because it's not in your trust res?
I'm gonna give you the why. Don't show me the trust res unless it has the things in it that you need to get the remedy you want. You tie my hands when you do that. We can talk accounting all day. Why? Because that kind of like, what about this, Brazil? Nah, scale it back a little bit. Well, I got to scale it back. Well, maybe you might need, you know, we can kind of go back and forth if you can get it right. When you show me that trust res, you have given me the law and the rules that you're governed by. So write the rules where you can do what you want to do. I'm always saying if you don't know, call it a general intangible. You know why? Because nobody is in prison for general intangibles. Everybody that's in prison for tax evasion, and I did include in tonight's layout the IRS interpretation of tax crimes. Why did I put that in the homework? Because you need to know that so you'll understand why I may be reluctant to say certain things. I'm not trying to let you commingle. That's another reason. Sometimes what you're saying to me on how you got that, you're kind of commingling. I can't have that on my conscience. I can't have you like thinking that, okay, Brazil said I can do this, so I can do this. And I'm like, nah, Brazil ain't said nothing. Other than the fact that if you want to do this, call it that. Because, well, why can't I do it that way? Maybe it's because how you're saying it, it implies commingling. And how the IRS is going to interpret it, it's like, okay, because this is what it is. They're not looking at your trust. They don't care that you're in a trust. What they care about is that that trust is interacting with Federal Reserve notes. That's what they're concerned with. Now, as long as you're dealing with gold and silver, they don't give a damn about that because that's not their jurisdiction. See, people have the concept of I can get cash and nobody knows about it. Let me explain this a different way. You know, we did this last night in the money versus real money scenario. There isn't a Federal Reserve note that's in existence that has not been scanned, followed. Look, even when you got another ATM, it's got a camera. Hell, they know. Look, even if you put it in the mattress, it's got a strip. They know where it's at. You're not hiding it from nobody. All they're doing is seeing if you're going to be honest with the math. That's all. They already got a mathematical figure. They're just trying to see if your figure matches their figure. I'm not saying it has to, but guess what? Most of us have been so indoctrinated, and you're walking around with things. I think I used the word of trustee earlier today. So I'm going to reiterate this. Every time you went into commerce today and you got what you call, for whatever reason, if that receipt, because that's what you call it. I don't call it a receipt. I call it a statement of account. If you look at that receipt, and if it's got a positive number and another positive number and it's saying it's zero, Houston, you got a problem. In your purse, in your possession, is evidence that they're using double entry accounting. They don't have to put that on the receipt. If you read the receipt, you can tell that's what's being done because two positive numbers can't equal zero. So you can't take that type of thinking and make it make sense when your concepts are all wrong. You're going to commingle. You're going to start saying me and mine and I. And when you say it to me, I can let it slide because I know what you mean. But, boy, when you start putting it on paper, or you just, you know, when you interact, when you talk about the transaction, you know, I'm not trying to tell you how to think. I'm just trying to get you to think about what you're saying, because it's how you're saying it, it's how you're doing it that's going to determine whether the remedy comes forthcoming or you got to force it. And remedies are never supposed to be forced. It should just be there. It's available without you having to do a whole lot. It's in the details. The mere fact that somebody in the public is requesting you to do something, you're only required to do it a certain type way. You take on all this extra burden because you start reading more into what's there than what it really is. You get a frivolous letter. Oh, they said this. I read it. It says you may. But you have already gone to the third, fourth, fifth chapter because they wrote you something and they said you may. They're really asking permission. Can we say that you did something fraudulent? Yes, sir. Okay. Well, you just killed my process. Good luck with me trying to convince you otherwise, because you are convinced you did something. They just suggested it. That doesn't make it right. Hell, just because you get a 1099 or a W-2 doesn't mean that's what it is. That's just what they said. You can take it and call it general intangible. Am I recommending that? You already know my spiel on that. So it was only because of it was just certain things I was asking outside of that NAV that I was looking for. So I'm going to give you the other side of it. Cancel those UCCs, put that information on the 990, and ride out. But see, when you put it on there, please know why you're putting it on there. Because you're going to have to probably explain that. I don't ever want you to put anything anywhere. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing. Here we go. If you're unsure, stay right where you at. If people have been waiting.
That, and that's.
You're right. If they've been waiting
where,
this long.
No, I was saying, you're saying if you don't understand it, then don't do it. And I said, I was saying, I think that's where my whole thing is. As I think I've discussed this with you before. You know, I've done, like you said, okay, when I first started this journey, my whole journey was, you know what? I read this publication and this, and I do taxes, and I understand this, and they lying to us, so I'm just going to do this. But I would call and call and call the general counsel, and a few of them have wound up being my friends or people that I'm saying friends with my air quotes, but people that I can call and talk to and give information. But they wouldn't tell me the real nitty-gritty. So I just said, you know what? Had a group of people. We were like, well, we're just going to do some stuff based on what we read and what we understand, and we're just going to do it, and we're going to throw some stuff against the wall and see what sticks. So in that, we were able to get some stuff done, but in the interim around that second or third go-round, you know, we had a little visitation that the alphabet
was. Right. That's what I'm saying. That's
And
I
so I move
that.
A little differently now. You
right,
see what I'm saying? My movements are a little more calculated. I'm not throwing anything against the wall to see what sticks because they know what sticks and somewhat what doesn't.
Right.
So in that, when I ask a question, I guess I'm saying I'm not looking for you to say, hey, Bloom, do it this way or do it that way. If I have pieces of understanding that's just not connecting, I don't go ahead.
I was going to say, that doesn't mean that the piece that you got prior to what I'm introducing, they're wrong. It's just you got to expound upon the piece that you already had and what I'm introducing. How do they coexist? The question is, can they coexist? But really, I'm notice how I'm responding. In your head, you're saying, can they coexist? The reality is should they coexist? What benefits you most?
Okay.
You know, so because it's not about how I or the IRS feels about what you know. So if you know, that's why it's like deduce everything to numbers. If I have $300,000 that's owed to me and I owe $100,000, well, my $100,000 ordeal ain't an ordeal. I just got to get the amount that's owed to me in the right spaces, in the right block. To the right people. See, because I'm owed this, I know there's a way to get what I am owed in a form that can be used to take care of the debt that's outstanding. I'm not the controller of time, space, and all that does not concern what we're talking about in commerce. But as a notary, and I'm talking to you, as a notary, I am a custodian of a commercial registry. And anything that's under the guidelines of GAAP, which is generally accepted accounting principles, and current expected credit loss provisions, I can record, I can register, I can administer, I can, you know, I can do all the things that every other bank can do because that's all you're required to do. Do just enough accounting and get enough accounting that you're comfortable with where you can easily articulate that to the next party. All right, because I think this is where I've made a mistake, and I'm going to clean this up tonight. Let's say we've talked about 30 different ways of doing this, and you know three really good, like three, I got those three. Let those three be what you minimally got to get the other side to do for you to have a meeting of the mind. They got to look like you, talk like you, quack. You know, if it talks like a duck, quacks like, you know, they got to be a duck. You're a creditor. And then if you're going to give anyone instructions, you're giving it to a what? A debtor. So they got to be that debtor. You got to instruct the debtor on what they should do in order for them to get their books on point without giving them legal advice. Now, if they want to watch this, if they want the hand holding and the soothsaying, make them a part of the trust. So that way, when they get the griping, you're like, all right, I hear your complaint, but you do know you're on the back of the bus. You don't tell us how to get you where you're going. Here's how this relationship works. If you stay to the end of the ride, I guarantee you will get there safe. If you get off before the trip is done, I can't determine whether you're going to get shot on the corner of Crenshaw and such and such. That's a real hostile area. People get killed there all the time. You don't want to ride. You're impatient. You know, more luck to you. May the force be with you. All your the government that is over your estate, they don't guarantee anything but an opportunity to do this stuff. They're not giving you no instructions. They're not, you know, holding no classes. All they require is to give you the opportunity to get it together. That's it. And you as the creditor, don't reinvent the wheel. Look, if they want to be all out there outside of trust, it's like, okay, you need to take this information to the IRS, the Treasury, and the court and get her done. Well, how do I do that? You need a notary. And you know, be firm with that, you know.
So why are you saying you did that wrong?
I did it wrong, meaning that I want you to use what you, because you have learned a lot, even though you think I still got so much to learn before I do this. You know enough to do
heck
it.
Heck yeah. No, I feel like I got it, because here's the thing. I have four young men that depend on me, plus a mother.
Right,
I cannot,
right.
I mean, and I will say this, when I went and I actually, when they rolled up on a couple of other trustees, I called for the meeting because you can't be rolling up on my trustees like that because that's really illegal.
Right.
Because we all have a system. But when I had the meeting, I feel like I handled my own and they told me something that I didn't know. They didn't mean to tell me. Though, I just don't like being in that position. You know what I'm saying? Because as you can see, I'm moving around. I'm free. They didn't hear me up. But at the same time, I don't want to have to make those phone calls and say, hey, we need to link up, we need to meet, and what day, what time are you available? I don't like even being in those positions. Even in the meeting, I didn't like being questioned. And I said that you can't question me. I'm the front of the guy talking. But I need to know all the other ins and outs because – at this point, you always say that you can say all this stuff, but it's what you do. And in the beginning, when I was throwing stuff against the wall, I was in the mind space of I think, therefore I am, you know. But now I'm moving into the being and doing as a creditor. And I don't want to have missed it. And, you know, there will be mistakes. And I feel as though where I am in my background now over the whole 2020, you know, situation, I feel as though luckily I'm in a space where I can, I'm comfortable cleaning up messes that I've stuck, you know, through to the wall and it's cleared off. So I'm okay with cleaning that up and I'm comfortable with that. I'm just more in the space now, okay. If I'm going to go into the Chris and say, hey, I have this judgment and I'm looking to get this, and this done, it's moving for me. I just don't understand how to get the back end done. So even reading the book, the answer's right here. Go ahead.
Right. So let me help you out. Remember, the public court, it appears like the public court is in opposition of you. And here's the reality. They're not really in opposition of you. They just operate. They occupy a different space. When you go through arbitration, you have the ability as a notary to take what you've arbitrated. And when you find a willing recipient, remember, the willing recipient is typically probably not coming from a trust. They're probably in the public. All they know is public jargon and connotative concepts. So this is when your notary, your being a notary really pays off. Remember, the American Arbitration Association, we have already done all the work. All they're waiting to do is they're ready to be paid to help these local jokers in the public. But here's how you must play that position. You're coming in after you've done all the stuff in your tribunal. You're giving the recipient the red pill, the blue pill. All right. The one pill, like in the Matrix, you could take this pill, go back to sleep, believe whatever the hell you want to believe. This other pill is going to show you how deep it goes. And all I am here to do is give you the one pill to let you do this however you want to do it or how deep you know it want to go. Most people in the public, you know, they're so conditioned, you know, you notice this with attorneys and accountants. They don't ever want to do nothing new. They want to do what they're used to doing. You know, that looks strange. Not saying what you're giving to them is wrong. It's just that it's not normal. It's not what everybody else does. They love follow the leader. Arbitration, when you now hit them with that fee schedule with the American Arbitration Association, and you've already got a judgment. They're used to that. It's going to scare the hell out of them because notice how I'm about to say this. They're only expecting you to know. You know how many people that are notaries don't understand how powerful they are in the whole commercial process? And that is by design. So when you have a little bit of notarial law experience in being a civil law notary, the other side is not ready for that. But they're in quicksand now that they can't move. Remember, the notary can determine whether who gets paid, who doesn't, and what method, what's acceptable, what's not. Now, when you bring it up, it's not that you're challenging them. You're just saying, look, if you want to be paid, the American arbitration is here to do X, Y, and Z. Notice how it's set. We've given you a minimum and maximum. I've reposted the fee schedule for the notary so you'll know when it comes to your clients how to get it over the other side without you having to give legal advice because you got the American Arbitration Association. I made it known last night, and I'm going to reiterate it again in this class. If you're in certain tier programs and or structures, so I'm going to lay this out because I might need to say it. You didn't enroll into the Law of Nations class, but you got classmates that have. They went ahead, they already done made the investment. That doesn't mean you can't work with them because you haven't gotten in the class. You just got to I expect every notary that is in the sound of my voice to be working with every other notary that's within the sound of my voice because I can't do all this stuff myself. I have a whole lot of intel. I don't have enough cases to express it and demonstrate it. A lot of what so if you want to know a specific procedure, if you haven't gone to the local law library to research it, go there first before you come back with, should I throw something on the wall and make it stick? I'm going to tell you why. Inside of the law library, inside of the legal notes, the judge is going to give you his cheat sheet. Well, the reason why I didn't give this particular client this is because of this, this, that, and the other. Oh, so if I need to get an award, I need to do this, that, and the other. Of course. They're going to lay it out. But it's in the law library. You can't Google it. You got to go physically to the law library and lay hands on the book. Now, I'm going to go back to what I said again last night. Notaries, I want you to go to the law library and flash your notary credentials because they may take you to a special part of the law library because every judge that has set up certain cases that he or she knows could be recusatory, when they step out of office, they're taking the damn files with them. Meaning when they step down as a judge, they're getting all those cases at the law library and they put them in the basement of their home. At least that's what they're doing in Georgia. Little Birdie already told me that. I'm telling you notaries to do this so because you are the commercial resident. You need to get your hands on this paperwork. Matter of fact, you're the only one that can get your hands on it. I'm going to put it out there. If I don't have an oath of office, I can't do it. I think they just killed our feed, so I'm so sorry. Look, we will be reconvening this class tomorrow, same bat station, same bat time.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you said the class is over?
Yeah, it just killed us. It just took us totally off the feed. I'm sitting here now like it's going to close me off in like 5 seconds.
Okay.
This is what I'm going to do. For everybody that's on, man, I knew the time we got good is going to cut us off. I'll reconvene this. Let me get some more stuff inside of the 365 Live, and I'll try to put a post back up for anybody that has any questions.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. Peace and love. Peace and love.
Peace.
Mm-hmm.